I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We ride here.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome in, everybody. It's another edition of Unrivaled right here with you on 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery here, Scott Mitchell there. You got your headphones plugged in there?
Huh? Can't hear you. Don't have my headphones plugged in.
Hanson, Scotty, seats are still warm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That always feels good.
Maybe a little too warm.
You know, I always love a cold toilet seat. Because then you know, it's been minutes since somebody has sat on this thing.
Yeah, you know, it's
The warm toilet seat, some people might find comfort in that. I do not.
Yeah, and sometimes when there's like a little bit of like, I don't know, water on the toilet seat. And once you've committed,
I've got six kids. Four of them are boys. There's never not a bad situation.
Never not water on the toilet.
Oh, my goodness.
It is just water.
Every time there's a family meeting, 90% of the family meetings have to deal with that very subject. Now, girls, I'm not talking to you. So, boys, can I talk to you for a second?
Sure.
Dad's got a moment we've got to spend here.
You only have, well, I guess your wife.
Here's the thing. I am absolutely just trying to – I'm just trying to tread water here. I'm trying to talk about anything except for the thing that I know we have to talk about. So we're going to start the show off with Scott being super grumpy and me being right there with him. It's some Utah Jazz talk shudder as we get going with the cut here. Yeah. So let's get going.
The other question. Undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
Do you snore at night? You're currently using a CPAP machine to treat that sleep apnea? Sound Sleep Medical can improve your life. SoundSleepMedical.com is the website. Boy, Scott, you almost, last night was one of those nights you almost turned the CPAP machine off and just say, Lord, take me.
just breathe off into oblivion. let me go.
Because, listen, I don't think that it could have been – the Jazz losing to the Rockets last night was maybe the worst feeling – oh, you're still doing the breathing exercises. Maybe the worst feeling of it that I think Jazz fans have had, certainly since that Clippers series, when you felt like the team was helpless with – Terrence Mann doing his thing, you know. Remember that whole feeling?
Right.
The feelings that were there were actually worse last night because it felt just as helpless. It felt just as bad. And even more so because you're not playing a playoff team. You're playing – and maybe I shouldn't be that worried about it. Maybe the grumpiness level, Scott, needs to match where they are in the season. They're only 45 games into the season. You know, Locke after the game in his postcast with Booner – I'm listening to this so that I can take a little bit of heart and medicine off of this thing, and I didn't get it. because what they just kept talking about was maybe it's time Quinn Snyder goes after this team a little bit and gets after it. Maybe it's time for some tough love. And I thought, oh, no. If you're talking about actually having to be hard on the team right now and they're not self-motivated or whatever they need to tell themselves to not lose to one of the worst teams that we've seen come into Vivint Smart Home Arena and get a win over the Jazz, it's one thing to lose to the Detroit Pistons on the road. It's another to lose last night to the Houston Rockets, a team who probably came in thinking, we know how this thing's going to go. We'll keep it close for a minute, and then we're gonna hit the snooze button in the second half, and we'll see you after a double digit loss. And the Jazz lose in just an embarrassing fashion. And my teenage son put it best: "Boy, it kind of sucks to be a Jazz fan right now. Not kinda. It's not good to be a Jazz fan. It's not fun to be a Jazz fan, and it does not feel like it's something that is actually fixable."
Do you want the silver lining, or do you want the Band-Aid ripped
off?
Which one would you like first?
I'm surprised there's a silver lining from Scott Mitchell today, so I'd love to hear it.
Of course there's a silver lining.
You're the positive guy usually, but you had nothing before the show.
Well, no, I'm not giving you the silver lining. I'll wait for that, because I got something to say.
Let me hear it.
I really was dreading coming on the radio today and having to talk about this. And the Jazz are clearly in a funk, and they clearly are out of sync. And you watch the game, and you watch this team. It's almost like they're running around, and they're a half a step slow. They're a half a step behind. It's like they're about two and a half second delay from what's happening right now in reality. It seems they're always chasing everything. There's no anticipation. Great defense is all about anticipation. And everything with the Jazz now is a reaction. It's a reaction late, and it's also I'm not even sure what I'm supposed to do or where I'm supposed to go. So it's either a lack of, they haven't been coached up right, or it's a lack of. I mean, and Quinn Snyder said after the game, he goes, "This is just really bad lapses on defense." So it's possibly. Some guys just not knowing, not preparing, not maybe expecting, like, hey, I'm a guy that doesn't play a whole lot, you know, and I'm happy kind of being in that backup role, and all of a sudden they're thrust out into the spotlight and they have to perform, and they're not ready to do it, because this Jazz team is just not really in a lot of sync. If you looked when they had the starters on the floor, it felt like, okay, this is a pretty decent team here. You know, when Connolly and Gobert.
You're short Donovan Mitchell, but all we heard before the game was is that, well, they do fine as long as Rudy Gobert's in the game.
And they felt like that for the most part. Now, Gobert and people going after Gobert, like under the basket last night, that was like, I didn't understand that at all.
I could not wrap my head around it.
No, you're just like, how? Yeah, it was strange. It was just something I don't think you normally see.
And Rudy said something too after the game. He's like, I let my teammates down in a lot of instances. And I thought,
that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable because Rudy's a guy that's put himself out there. If you're going to call everybody out, then you have to show up. And a lot of guys do that. A lot of guys will publicly speak out so that they ensure that they're gonna rise to that moment. You get a guy like Tom Brady and some of these guys that just put, you know, they go, this is unacceptable, this will not happen, and I won't let it happen. And so Gobert, that's a massive disappointment, because it's not putting your money where your mouth is at all, and it's an embarrassment. But you get past the first unit here, you've got Rudy Gay out, you've got Hassan Whiteside out, you've got Donovan Mitchell out. And so now you've got three guys, you know, really, you got two guys that are kind of in that second rotation for the Jazz, and even Donovan Mitchell, because, you know, their rotations, they kind of mix that up. You know, there's your first eight guys. You're missing three of your first eight guys. Then all these new guys coming in clearly are not in sync and not on the same page, and probably haven't had a lot of time to kind of get on that page, whether it's practice or whatever. Or even experience-wise, and that's what you start to see with this team. Should people panic today? Yeah, they should.
See, we were kind of don't panic thing the other day, right?
Well, you got Danny. Danny Ainge on the sideline. Right?
I love that everybody's like, "Oh, the Jazz are 9-9 since Danny Ainge took over." Danny Ainge is doing anything?
It's not Danny
right
Ainge.
Now? Of course not.
It's what Danny Ainge represents, and Danny Ainge. I mean, and it's what the ownership represents. He said, "We're here to get this thing right." You don't bring Danny Ainge in. You don't. you don't surround yourself with people like
Justin Zanuck and Quinn Snyder
and the whole group, you know, and so you just don't do it unless you're really serious about, hey, we want championships here. You know, we just do. And so,
well, how do you think Ryan Smith and Dwayne Wade are feeling right now?
Well, Dwayne Wade's one of the guys you bring in to say, look, you know, this is a guy that's won championships. This is a guy that understands this process. And you either as a player go, you know what? Awesome. Man, that gives me hope, and they play better. Or the players go, you know what? Maybe I'm not living up to it. And so they start pushing, because that's what it felt like. A lot of guys pressing and doing too much. I mean, you mentioned Royce O'Neal in our show prep about, like, that was the worst air ball three-point attempt I think I've ever – I mean, it looked like someone who's never shot a three-pointer in the NBA before.
It was one of those things where I actually was like, oh, my gosh. And then immediately – It was one of those moments where I closed my eyes, and you know, your head tilts up to the heavens and your eyes are closed, and you went, what are we doing? What are we watching here? What am I spending my life doing, acting like that this Jazz team is going to be anywhere near a Western Conference Finals? Now, can things turn around? I mean, I guess. I don't at some point it feels like it's much more to fix than just, you know, a couple of games here and there without having your stars in COVID. I don't know. Maybe we're not far enough removed from the COVID situation for me to really go, hey, there's a problem here.
Let me give you some insight.
Is it only, let me just give you the silver lining part?
No.
Okay.
We're not there yet.
The only reason I came to work today was for the Scott Mitchell silver lining.
I didn't think I'd have it today.
The trademark
silver
lining.
I actually did not think it would show up.
You said you have it, though.
I know
it's
I do.
It's in the back pocket?
It hit me as we sat down here. Yes, there is a silver lining in all this.
All right.
This is not the silver lining. This is actually part of the solution. This I know for sure. Like, this is an absolute in life that I know with 100% assurity, and I bring it up all the time on our show in certain examples. Exactly what you think is exactly what's going to happen. And so when you watch this team.
What are you, Oprah? Is this the secret? If you think that parking spot next to the building is going to be there, it's going to be
It's a real thing. I'm just – this isn't some hokey, you know, crazy out there thing.
All right.
Okay. And your performance is specifically impacted by how you think about things. And when you have a player, let's just take Royce O'Neal. Royce O'Neal, when he shot that three-pointer, he was not thinking about it going in. He was not thinking about – he was like, oh, man, shoot, I'm open. I got to shoot. I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you that's what was going through his mind. He was not like, yep, got the ball. I'm wide open. I'm going to drain it. And this team, for whatever reason, is looking over its shoulder. It's not in sync. It's not playing right. And so this whole thing about Danny Ainge is a real thing, because all these players know the trade deadline's coming. Jordan Clarkson came here from Cleveland out of the blue. The Jazz are looking. Like, they know this is not okay. They know this team has to be better. And Danny Ainge goes, look, I've won championships. I've been with the Celtics. I know Dwayne Wade. Look, this is here's what's going on here. And probably in concert with Quinn Snyder, with Justin Zanuck, the whole crew, and they go, how do we get better? What do we need? And I guarantee you the players are aware of it. So it's either I don't understand what I'm doing. I'm not really prepared. I'm worried about whatever's going to happen down the road, like I might get traded. All those are negative things. Like, they're just negative. And you can just see the energy. And then all of a sudden, Rudy Gobert starts to spout off. Donovan Mitchell starts to spout off. And there's something going on. And it's clearly how this team is thinking about itself right now. Because they know that they're capable of being so much better as a basketball team. But the way they're thinking about themselves is like they're a lottery team. Like they can't win. And I'm just telling you, it is so much about a mindset, and I talk about this all the time, and you can just see it. It's just oozing out of the Utah Jazz. Their minds are so in the wrong place right now, and it's a matter of them just flipping a switch and thinking about things in a different perspective.
Let's look real quick at where this at where things ended up last night. Rudy Gobert had 23 points, pretty low 9 rebounds. Bojan Bogdanovic had 29 points, fine. Mike Conley, 17, fine. Jordan Clarkson, 19, fine. These are all things that you kind of would expect. Royce O'Neal with 3 points. I know that the 15 rebounds everybody looked at and went, boy, he was really working the boards last night. But his Twitter handle is Buckets O'Neal. I would prefer the bucket part of that, right? And I think that a lot of people looked at that box score and went, hold on a minute. It's not just that. It's one thing to have, you know, 5 guys in double figures for the Rockets. Garrison Matthews shows up and has 23 points last night. Garrison Matthews, of course, the pride of the Lipscomb University Bisons. You know him, Scott. You know him as Lipscomb's career point scorer. You already know that about Garrison Matthews. What I'm saying is the guy got signed to his first actual contract in the NBA that wasn't a 10-day contract a month ago. Okay? That's the guy scoring 23 points on the Jazz. When they lost to the Detroit Pistons back in Detroit, fill in the blank. If it's a Terrence Mann for the Clippers, it's always somebody who, well, they usually don't score that many points. Garrison Matthews usually doesn't score that many points. Well, against a Jazz team that's supposed to be, quote-unquote, one of the best defensive teams in the league, my heavens, you don't have those. So how are these nights happening? Is it because there's not a mental toughness? Is it because there's not – you said there was a silver lining. Did you get to it at some point?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't got to it yet. But you're
now's a good time to roll it out, because now that we're 15 minutes into the show, I'm starting to hit a boiling point.
Right. But
now that we're talking about it, I'm like, I cannot believe – because when I watched it last night, I couldn't believe how bad that third quarter was when they scored 19 points.
When you talk about these players and you go, who are they, right? And they just signed their new NBA contract,
right?
Terrence Mann, whomever you're talking about. You know what they thought about? Nothing. They're like, awesome, I got this awesome opportunity. I'm just going to go for it. What do I have to lose? And the Jazz are playing so uptight and so out of sync and out of sorts. And they're thinking about everything that's absolutely negative in the world. And really, the solution, I know this. I know without a doubt, it's so much in their mind about you've got to focus on the correct and positive outcome. That's just I know it sounds so simple, but I'm telling you, the way you think has a physiological impact to your performance. No question about it. So you have bad thoughts, guess what? Bad things are going to happen, and you're going to be absolutely right. So here's the silver lining.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. There's only one thing I believe is great about losing, and that is that it makes you realize, I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be like this, and it is an absolute great motivator.
What is it?
When you lose, you go, this sucks. I hate this feeling. I hate feeling like this, and I want to do everything within my power to make sure
losing. It
doesn't happen. That's part of the silver lining. But here's the silver lining.
All right.
The only way to really appreciate a championship and to appreciate succeeding is having had moments like this. If you can't have those low moments, and every team you'll hear about that wins championships, they go, man, we just remember back to a point in the season when everything seemed like it at its bleakest. Like, and we just thought, oh, there's no chance, there's no shot. And we somehow found a way to overcome that really challenging, that really difficult, that really hard time. And that's where championship teams, that's where teams that succeed, they go, it's not that you fail. Everyone fails. Everyone loses. Every good team loses. Every great player loses. Every great player misses shots, misses game-winning shots. Everyone does. But it's the one that just says, I'm not going to let that define me. I'm going to fight through this. I'm going to find more determination. And when I do, I'm going to have a greater appreciation for when I have success. And so that's the silver lining, is that as ugly as this is, it's the ability to be able to turn it around, because you can become an active participant in the in the turnaround, in the right direction. And it's all up to you and how you choose to do this. But when you do turn it around, you appreciate it so much more because you went through this struggle, because you went through this tough, this difficult time. That's really the silver lining.
So I was what's great is that the Jazz aren't in L.A. They're not a Los Angeles team. You know, we wish sometimes that you got the big market attention. If this kind of thing happens in big markets, let me tell you, this happened like
in the forest.
Well, I read a no. I'm
wherever a tree falls in the forest, no one knows.
If you're in Utah and your team is it falls,
they lose.
Does anybody hear it? And the answer is not totally. I mean, nobody's as freaked out about the Jazz woes right now than this locker room and this market. Right?
Yeah,
we're freaking out about it because you're going, I thought this was supposed to be the good team. I thought this was a better version of the team. I thought this was supposed to be another year where they're fighting for a championship. When is that going to happen? But the interesting thing is I go online today and I see the Lakers are broken. How do we fix them? Our experts weigh in. And I went, oh, shoot. The team that's quote-unquote broken are the ones that beat their last win was against the Jazz on Sunday.
The broken team actually beat the Jazz.
The broken team beat the Jazz on Sunday.
It's like the broken team has a massive discussion, and you're so beyond broke, it's not even worth talking about.
Up.
It's
you
like it's just not even talking. Now, so why are we talking about this?
I get it because the Jazz are still, you know, pretty far ahead of the Lakers when it comes to the Western Conference standings, right? But I mean, at some point, you look at the record and you go,
you know what? That's really a good thought. Hey, Jazz fans. Look, as bad as it is, at least we're not the Lakers.
Hey, you're still...
At least we're not the Lakers.
You're still, six and a half games ahead of the Lakers in the West.
Not the Lakers.
That's a good feeling. All right? So there's the silver lining, Scott.
You don't live in Cleveland.
Thanks, Sam Weiss. Oh, my goodness.
That's a new battle cry. You don't live in L.A.
Garrison Matthews had 23 points last night.
Who?
Hey, Mr. Garrison. I mean, I am just absolutely, when I'm watching it, I'm going, I'm literally looking up Garrison Matthews last night going, what is going on here?
It kind of seems like in all the losses to these really bad teams, though, that they just have this, like,
there's always somebody.
It's just insane night. There's just this crazy, like, anomaly. It's just like.
It must be all the amazing defense the Jazz are playing, just, though, right?
Yeah, so it's like, is it
Terrence Mann has 39 points in the playoffs and basically jump-started his entire career based off of that night.
So is it bad defense, or is it just like we just have a
people
guy just played out of his rear end?
You know, playing out of your rear end. I wish he would have played out of his rear end because then you probably would have seen a worse performance. I think the term is playing out of your mind.
I've heard it said a different way.
Oh, just shooting those three-pointers out of the old tush there, buddy. My goodness. I don't know what to think. At this point, there's no game because they've already lost to the Pacers twice, to the Magic, to the Pistons, to the Rockets. They've lost to all in their last seven games. Three of those losses have come to the three worst teams in the NBA. So there's no game where you can look and go, they got it, they got this. We had one last chance. It was last night.
I don't think that's all bad.
Hold on, our producer Jeremy's a Rockets fan.
I don't think it's bad.
Remember when we were walking out of the building?
I don't think it's bad in the sense that, look, you just need to show up every night. You just need to create those habits of winning every single night, and you can't take anybody lightly. I don't see that's a bad lesson to learn if you're a basketball team. Now, whether the Jazz are willing to do it, I don't know.
That every night you can't take for granted.
No.
Even against it. Now, last year you could have walked in on a bunch of teams and just beat them. But, I mean, Tim Lacombe always says this. Tim's going to come on with us at about 5 o'clock today. But he always says, man, this team or this league, everybody's pretty dang good. Locks is the same thing. I mean, you've said it about the NFL where it's like every night there's a reason that these guys are as good as they are. But there are teams like the Rockets where they actually don't intend to be that good right now. they're not trying to be amazing. I'll tell you, your rebuild – the Jazz are helping you rebuild. You're rebuilding that the mental blocks there. Hey, we are a pretty good team. It's the last thing you want is Houston feeling good about themselves going forward. Russell Westbrook, the guy is stinking it up right now for the Lakers. It's the only thing keeping me above water. Other people's failures are the only thing that are keeping me happy right now. Okay? That's a bad place to be in life. Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got an interesting discussion to have because Jackson Dart took a visit down to BYU. Jeff Hansen, 24/7, going to join us and give us his thoughts on recruiting. He is a recruiting guru when it comes to BYU. We're going to get his thoughts on what that visit actually means. If that actually means that he is in the mix, or is it just nice window dressing? He's being nice and visiting a team that he gave some respect to before. Is Jackson Dart truly an option, or is BYU really an option for Jackson Dart? We'll come back. We'll talk about that. Much more to go right here. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back to Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell here in front of me. Will you play that clip real quick, Jeremy, that Quinn just said? Just in that Jazz update, Scott, I want you to listen to this, what Quinn Snyder said about that loss last night.
We just had multiple breakdowns over the course of the game in different capacities defensively, helping when we shouldn't have been helping, not recognizing personnel situations, not focused on the details of what we're trying to do on the defensive end. Some of it was transition. We weren't communicating and reacting collectively in a lot of half-court situations that gave them looks. Some threes where we had breakdowns. We got guys that were not supposed to leave. We find them getting shots. We're switching on to different guys.
We get it. If you followed the game on Twitter last night, like if you watch the game and then you're looking at Twitter, I mean, Jazz weren't the only ones having multiple breakdowns. People abandoned their team after nights like last night, at least temporarily. The multiple breakdowns on the floor led to multiple breakdowns by so many people, including my 13-year-old who basically said, "Well, this team stinks," and moved on.
Was your son like help? Yeah, helping on defense when he should have stayed on his man?
Don't
you coach your kids better?
No, he was.
What are you trying to do there?
I told him yesterday, you got to help out, man. All right.
Yeah, so if guy again, that just goes back to my point.
I know.
It just like these guys are just not where they need to be. And by that, I mean you're talking mentally. Yeah.
Yeah. Quinn's talking about like actually spacing on the floor.
But that's part of the mental, like you got to get, you know, if your mind is right, you're going to know what you're supposed to do.
All right. Scott, stop talking about the Jazz, dude. Jeez.
Glad to.
Joining us right now on the program. First time guest with us, but somebody who I've followed a long time on Twitter because he's a funny follow on Twitter. And he's got a lot of info. Jeff Hansen, CougarSportsInsider.com is where you can find him, a part of the 24/7 sports family. Jeff, thanks for being on the program, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing today?
Fantastic.
We're not doing fantastic, Jeff. We're really pissed off right now. The Utah Jazz suck, and we just don't want to have to talk about it. Life is wonderful. Glad to meet you.
Yeah. we're tickled to not have to actually talk Jazz for the next 8.5 minutes. So, Jeff, yesterday, I don't know, how surprised was Cougar Nation, I guess, to see that Jackson Dart did actually throw a visit to BYU? And was it kind of a throwing BYU a bone situation, or is there a real possibility of BYU being in the mix for Jackson Dart?
I think a little bit of both, right? So the surprise came, if you followed the national headlines with Jackson Dart at all over the last couple of weeks, BYU started out kind of hot as a place that people mentioned all the time. It was a topic, a talking point for all of the national recruiting guys. And then over the last couple of weeks, everything just sort of migrated to OU and Ole Miss. And that was it. That was the talk of the town. There were articles and national guys saying that was it. He'd whittled his list down. People around BYU had maintained contact with Jackson Dart from the minute he entered the portal, talked every day all the way up until yesterday when he had his visit. So was it a surprise for BYU fans? I think so, but I don't think that BYU themselves was surprised at all. I think they expected this. And was it a courtesy visit? I mean, maybe, but it felt like it was part of the plan for the coaches. It felt like if Jackson was going to make a decision and it was really OU or Ole Miss, why even bother wasting anybody's time at BYU? He may not choose BYU in the end, but it does feel like this was part of the plan. It just didn't get talked about on those national headlines.
So the transfer portal is fascinating to me, and I'm curious about is it for everyone? I mean, you have these, you know, so-called national power. I mean, I think of the players that have transferred in and out of Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. Is it for those teams, or can other schools actually make a move and kind of turn a program around quicker because of the transfer portal?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it really depends on how it's utilized. It's tough, and I think teams are still kind of feeling themselves out. But you look at a team like BYU, they've been able to add Puka Nacua, Kingsley Suamataia. If they can add a Jackson Dart, that changes the dynamics of that roster going into 2022 and 2023 for sure, even with just those few players. That doesn't make a whole team, right? The bread and butter is still going to be high school recruiting and developing talent, but it does allow some of these small tier schools to add a little bit of flavor to what they have already been cooking with their roster, and that makes a big difference. Now, definitely the big schools, I think they use the transfer portal to their advantage. They can kind of go and get the talented kids that they want. And then they could also go and push their kids out, right? The kids who aren't developing the way that they wanted to or they hoped that they would when they were coming out of high school. There's a lot of people that hit the transfer portal. I think Georgia, the day after the national championship, saw seven guys enter the portal. So those teams do it's a good job, I guess, in air quotes, right? It's not a great job. It's not fun for the players, but they do a good job of managing their roster, kind of like a pro football team does, that they're going to move some guys along and go out and scan the waiver wire and get the guys that they want to come in.
Jeff, one of the things I really love that you tweeted out was BYU fans coming at everybody who is even talking about Jackson Dart and the possibility of him coming to BYU. There's an interesting thing of, like, I don't know if it's a low self-esteem like move that I think BYU fans, you know, kind of have, which is to go, oh no, that we've already got a quarterback, man. Jaren Hall's good. You don't want to have to come in here and stir the pot up. And I think one of your responses was great, which is like, why on earth would you try to turn away a 5-star Gatorade National Player of the Year because you say, no, we're good? Because BYU's never been a place, especially going into the Big 12, to say, no, we're all full up on talent here.
Right. I mean, it's insanity to even think about that, right? But like teams like Alabama, they had, Jalen Hurts and Mac Jones on their roster, and they still went out and recruited Tua Tagovailoa. If Alabama is still trying to get as much talent as they possibly can, why in the world wouldn't BYU? Why would they be the school that throws their hands up and says, no, we're full, we're good? It really is an interesting dynamic. And as I think about the transfer portal, it's genesis really came from players wanting more power, right? Players wanted to be able to enter the portal whenever they wanted. They wanted to be able to transfer without sitting out. They wanted to be able to have that freedom. Well, there's two sides to that coin. That means that teams can now bring players in that don't have to sit out. They can act like a professional team. And so the players kind of wanted this. Now they can't be offended or they can't be upset when the teams use it to their advantage and start raking in as much talent as they possibly can. And that's just something the fans are going to have to get used to. I think you're right, Alex. I don't know why, for whatever reason, BYU fans are incredibly loyal to their guys. And look, BYU has talent on the roster. Jaren Hall's great. Jacob Conover has, you know, some potential and a bright future. But you don't turn away guys like Jackson Dart. I mean, there's a very reasonable argument to be made that he's the best of those three today. Even if you don't believe that, he certainly has the potential to be the future for BYU down the road, right? So how do you turn that away? You would think that BYU with some of the stories of guys like, you know, Jake Heaps or Tanner Mangum, you would think that they would kind of be accustomed to, hey, we need as much talent as we can, because you never know when somebody who has high expectations just isn't going to pan out like you hope.
Well, what does BYU say to Jackson Dart then? I mean, if it's like we don't want to turn him away, how do we get him here? Do they have to make him promises to say you're going to come in and start? Or well, if you come here, you're going to have to kind of work your way in and compete? Or Jaren's our guy and you know, we'll see where it falls. I mean, what kind of promises or kind of conversation is that would actually have him go to BYU?
Yeah, that's the tricky question right there. Is, you know, that Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss is making promises. I don't think that's Kalani Sitake's style. And I think he has proven over the course of his tenure at BYU that the best guy is going to play. I mean, he had Zach Wilson and everybody around the program going into 2020. They knew that Zach Wilson was going to be the guy. But it was still an open quarterback competition. Zach hadn't quite taken off like he did in 2020 yet. He wasn't the first-round draft pick yet, but everybody in that program knew that a healthy Zach was the best quarterback, and they still went a couple of weeks into fall camp with that public narrative that it was a competition. And I truly believe that if Jaren Hall would have beaten, outplayed Zach in those couple of weeks of fall camp, he would have been the guy. And so I think that's the pitch for a guy like Jackson Dart. And does he accept that, or does he take a promise? That, you know, that's up to him. But I think Kalani can say, hey, look at my track record. I don't care if there's an upperclassman who's been a multi-year starter. If a true freshman comes in and is better, he's going to play. If a newcomer like Tyson Williams comes in and he's better, we'll sit Lopini Katoa down, right, and he's, you know, he'll be the backup after that. And because he's been able to do that consistently over the course of the last few years, I think that holds a little bit more weight for Kalani than it does for some other coaches that maybe that just looks like, oh, hey, yeah, we're going to have a competition, but they don't really mean it.
Jeff, what is the pitch that BYU can make for their program versus OU and versus Ole Miss? And, you know, I think Lane Kiffin, you know, to me, when he recruits, he looks like he's trying to be the cool dad who's like, you know, this weekend with the pictures of the Aston Martin and looking like he's like, you know, he's like one of those friends, like your friend's dad who's like, hey, you guys want to go do the In-N-Out line? It just seems like it's like a cheap move by the guy.
In-N-Out is not cheap.
No. I'm just saying
recruit anybody.
Get some local dealership to throw an Aston Martin and take some lame pictures with your recruit. But in the end, what does BYU offer that would actually be attractive for Jackson Dart?
Well, I think that Aaron Roderick is the key for BYU. Roderick was one of the first guys on him, on Jackson Dart when he was still playing at Roy and before he really took off at corner his senior year. Aaron Roderick stayed on him, was happy for him when he committed to USC, and was right back on top of him when he hit the portal again. So there's a really strong relationship with Aaron Roderick, and that holds a lot of weight. That may not be enough in the end, but that holds a lot of weight. But part of that relationship that I think BYU is selling hard is that A-Rod really knows how Jackson plays, and he has proven with Zach Wilson, with Jaren Hall, and even some of the other guys who aren't NFL guys like Baylor Rahmi and even Tanner Mangum for a year. He has shown that he knows how, Aaron Roderick knows how to get the most out of his quarterbacks. Lane Kiffin's been great. When he has elite talent, he gets elite talent. But A-Rod has, I think, done a really good job of maximizing the potential, whatever it is, for every quarterback that he has had during his time at BYU. Some players haven't had the ceiling that a guy like Zach Wilson did, but every single player, I think there's an argument to be made, reached their full potential under A-Rod. And I think that is going to be the biggest pitch for Jackson Dart, for BYU and for Jackson Dart, is that, hey, you've got elite potential, and look at my track record. I can get every ounce of talent that you have in you to show up on the field, to show up on tape, so that NFL scouts are seeing it down the road. And even at a school like BYU, we've proven that when you get to that point, you can get to the NFL. And I think that's going to be the biggest pitch. And then there's all the ancillary stuff, you know, proximity to home, things like Dart does train with John Beck out in LA. He can still stay close and do some of that stuff in the off season a lot more easily than he could if he was in Oxford. So there's those ancillary pitches, but I think this one comes down to just A-Rod and Jackson talking ball like they have been doing for the last 3 years. And I think that holds a little bit more weight now that Jackson has seen kind of the lights of the big-name school, and maybe his priorities have changed a little bit the second time around.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Actually, I like that.
That's something that you've always pointed out. Yeah. Like, A-Rod is getting guys, man. He's getting these guys.
So I'm curious, Jeff, early signing, the transfer portal, how important is the actual traditional signing day? Is it dead? Is there any value in it? Where does it stand right now?
Yeah, you know what? It kind of lost a lot of its luster with the early signing period, and I'm anxious to see if the NCAA kind of adjusts because of what has happened. I don't think this is anything that they anticipated. But yeah, coming up a couple weeks from now is the traditional signing period. it really is just kind of the celebration of all of the other guys that have signed. But now with the transfer portal, you know that class still isn't finished. There's still going to be bodies that are added after spring ball. So it is kind of just a day now that feels a little bit funny, but it is a big moment for these high school kids. And I think that's the most important part. As fans, we have a tendency to get lost in the recruiting battles, and you want as many stars as you can get on the roster. But I do like the idea of a dedicated day like signing day that is still celebrated, because it gives these high school kids a platform to really celebrate the fact that they're living out the dream that so many people had, and that's awesome. Outside of that, it really doesn't hold the weight that it once did, because the roster management is it's a year-round thing now, not just one day. But it is cool to have a day to celebrate these guys.
Jeff Hansen, easy enough to find him on Twitter. He's a great follow to have, too, if you're one of those BYU fans who's looking to actually kind of get the rundown on all the recruiting side of things, especially CougarSportsInsider.com. That's part of the 24/7 Sports Network. Jeff, thanks for hanging out, man. We'll love to have you back again.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
There you go. Jeff Hansen. Insightful stuff, man.
That was good.
Interesting to see what they're going to do. Interesting to see what Jackson's going to have to do, make that decision. I think being close to home, if I'm an 18-and-a-half-year-old, like, that's actually less. I actually don't. Like, I don't want to be that close to home. That was me, though.
You know,
that was me at 18.
Lane Kiffin is hot today, but he could be cold tomorrow.
Lane Kiffin is so hot right now.
Well, he has. I mean, he's been kind of all over the place. He's been everywhere, but he hasn't really been anywhere. And Ole Miss isn't a place you're going to just win in the SEC.
Ole Miss. Let's take the break here. We'll come back. More to go on the program, including around the corner. We've got our What Are the Odds segment for the day. Super Bowl question in there. BYU question in there. Utah Jazz also in there. Yeah. You're going to have to do it. Stay right here with us. More to go. Oh, before we get out, it's a new year. Maybe you're looking at sprucing up the old home on the outside there. Need a new look? RGS Exteriors can give your home that look with stucco, brick, vinyl, James Hardy siding. Get that new look for this year by calling 801-280-3110. That's 801-280-3110. RGS Exteriors and Construction. More to go right here. It's Unrivaled 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less. What's going to happen? This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Hey, Jazz fans. Is this a good... I mean, like, I don't know. When's the next time we're giving out Jazz tickets? That's what I think people still
next
want
October.
Jazz tickets. Come on. Don't do that. We love giving out the Jazz tickets.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
My thing is just that I
would I go to a Jazz game?
Even
tomorrow? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be right there.
No, of course.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, there is an energy around the team when things are going really well. Like, if they would have won that game at Detroit last week and then won that Houston game, they'd have 31 wins.
I don't want to hear coulda, wouldas, and shouldas. Who they are is who they are.
No, I know. I'm just saying that he's just such
bad. What you're saying is they're not that far off. They're just not that far off?
No, they feel further off than they've ever been in the last, like, 3 years, right?
Well, as bad as it feels, they're not really in that bad a position.
I love that people are blaming Danny Ainge already, though. the guy is, like, still reading the, the manual for the Jazz.
No, not the manual, the roster. He's going, who's number double zero? Who's zero?
Can we pick up this Garrison kid out of Houston? Yeah, come on. No, but Danny Ainge getting lit up last night on Twitter, hilarious. Like, just there's as if he made any impact on how the last 18 games have gone since they've made him the CEO. Come on. Scott, what are the odds goes like this? We roll out a scenario, and people like yourself or myself, you can yell it at your radios. You're going down the road as well. You can give us the percent chance, 0 to 100% chance that the thing that we are talking about will or will not happen. So there you go. Jersey number that applies to that same number, you get bonus points.
Yeah.
Fake bonus points. Bonus points that don't add up to anything. It's just feel-good points for you. Market update, though,
and
real quick.
And you do feel smarter when
no,
you do
for
that,
sure. Yeah. Market update real quick, brought to you by TryDayTrading.com. Dow off again today, more than 300 points. Down 313. Wow. NASDAQ down 186 today.
Are they like investing in the Jazz? Or was that what the stock market's done?
Why would you do that? S&P 500 off 50 points as well. So all the markets off just about 1% today. It's been like that the last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, congratulations. That's nice.
Market update brought to you by TryDayTrading.com. There you go. Scott, first up here, what are the odds that you'll actually watch the Super Bowl halftime show? Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige, Eminem, Kendrick Lamar. Now, they released a trailer. Have they ever released a trailer for there was a trailer released for the Super Bowl halftime show. So they released a trailer, I guess, for the halftime show. The Super Bowl halftime show, it's a complicated relationship that it has with its viewers. Because there are people who are just there. It's the halftimes don't matter ever in the NFL except for...
Why do you have to promote this?
I know. Like,
why do you have to promote halftime?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, but like every year, the Super Bowl, they make such a huge deal about who's at halftime.
All right, so what are the odds?
What are the odds you're
going
to watch the Super Bowl halftime show?
Oh, everyone watches the halftime show, regardless of who it is. They'll tune in and they'll go, nah, or wow, that was pretty good.
Ooh, not good.
Yeah, people will tune in. That's a high one.
But see, this one for me personally, like this is high school for me. Snoop and Dr. Dre. There you go. Look at Scott dancing in the studio. Oh, I can get down with this. Did you say this was the Snoop Dogg?
No.
Snoop Dogg? Is this Dre MD?
It's not Eminem, I know that.
Is this Dre MD, Dr. Dre?
Yeah.
Yes. Is he a medical doctor?
Is this Kendrick Lamar? Which one is it?
This is.
I know it's not Snoop, and I know it's not Eminem.
You don't think it's... it is Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been my guess.
Yeah.
So you want my vote here?
Yeah.
We playing a game or what are we doing?
Yeah,
playing
I was just loving the music for a minute there. All right, go ahead.
This is high. 70% Jackie Slater.
Okay. I'm going to go with John Taylor, was he 82?
Yes.
82%.
Why are you asking me? Why do you do this every day? You ask me, like, I'm taking half your points, just so you know.
No, but I got it right. It was 82.
Right, but you didn't know
that's
that
like
you
got filling in the bubble.
You have to know the filling in the bubble.
I'm a little bit cheating off the sheet.
Well, what you have to do is you have to pretend like you know the number, even if you don't, because I'm not going to fact
former
check
former 49er
you.
Wide receiver, John
you
Taylor,
think this is
82%.
Like politics where
there
we fact check everything?
Boom.
No.
I just said it.
All right. Now,
Hawaii is an open job on the college football market. What are the odds that a BYU coach on staff actually gets that Hawaii job?
I think it would be so hard to be the Hawaii coach.
Awful. And right now,
no,
it'd
just be awful.
Actually, right now, it'd be
like in paradise all the time. I don't know that I could work every day. We're going to the beach. We're going to surf.
Their exiting regime is like as bad as it gets. Like they've had. It's like all the parents have called the school and want to pull their kids
out
of the class.
It's like Urban Meyer on steroids.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
This is bad.
I understand.
So what are the odds that a BYU coach – is somebody in the running for it? Is Tuiaki in the – Ed Lamb. I could – Ed Lamb.
Yeah.
Ed Lamb and Tuiaki in the same
– I think Tuiaki maybe might – I don't know.
He's a D.C.
Yeah.
Ed Lamb gets that like – they're like he's the – he's like the brainiac of the – he's like the guy who calls all the timeouts.
This is kind of low. I don't think it's super high. I'll say, was Larry Zonka 39%?
Well, you stop it. I hate you. Stop.
Larry Zonka, 39%.
Okay, Larry Zonka, 39. I think it's also relatively low. I'm going to go with a Jamal Williams 21% chance. Tuiaki's a defensive coach. Hawaii needs to hire a guy who is like, I need everyone to stand on the sidelines and be a wide receiver and have an offense set up. That's what you need. Scott, final one here.
All right.
What are the odds Utah Jazz have a winning streak of 8 or more games at some point during the rest of the season?
I'll give it a 22% Danny Ainge.
Was he 22?
Doesn't matter what his number was. It's just Danny Ainge, and it's low.
I'm going to go.
He's the problem, man.
He hasn't done anything. I love that. Danny Ainge, fix this now. That was my favorite last night. Fix this now, Danny Ainge. How dare you? I'm going to go with also a low number. 8 games is tough to do already. You got to get your head
I just
right.
want to see the Jazz play 8 games. I mean, win, lose, or whatever.
I'm going to go with the Darren Williams 8% chance that they get 8 games in a row.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. Next hour, we'll talk about the NCAA making some moves. They're trying to stay up with speaking of trying to keep up with the kids these days, man, in an ever-changing landscape of college football and college sports and compensation, they have now ratified a new constitution, Scott. The reality is you didn't know they had a constitution in the first place, but the rules are getting a little bit more complicated. The NCAA is trying to make them a little bit more simple. We'll come back, talk about it next. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone of the Zone Sports Network.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's another hour right here of Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. If you miss any part of the program, you can always download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. Also, any of the other shows during the day on The Zone Sports Network as well. DJ and PK in the morning, Jake and Ben at 10 to noon, Hanson Scotty, noon to 3, and then Unrivaled. Boom. All found. Just go to. You can also download the KSL Sports app. Get all the podcasts there as well. Scott, the NCAA starting things off this hour. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the stuff they're trying to get done when it comes to their new constitution. Now, the NCAA is they're trying to figure this thing out. This is a fluid deal here. So we're going to start off the hours we always do with the cut. Let's jump right into it right here.
The unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right. Right off the bat here, Scott. The type of reform that needs to happen in the NCAA is... Really, there needs to be there can't be any more pretending that this institution, that the NCAA is not just totally about earning dollars for themselves. And you know, I don't know if they're trying to take it away from the athletes, but I certainly don't think I think that the old school thinking has been, well, if the athletes end up getting money, then the amateurism goes away. Now they were fine in making money themselves. Mark Emmert, you know, and the NCAA. Are totally fine making money themselves. But a new constitution that they've just ratified states that the college athletes should not be paid directly by their schools for athletic participation. But this new constitution, Scott, leaves it up to each division to decide whether education-related benefits that athletes can receive from their schools, what those actually are, and how athletes can make money from the NIL stuff. So this has gotten...
It sounds like to me...
What is it?
Well, first of all, when you have like a new constitution, isn't that mean there's been some kind of revolution? Some kind of like...
It's happened, right?
Right. And hasn't that happened? Hasn't there been a revolt? It's clear
well,
they've lost
now.
This battle. They've lost
Absolutely.
This war. And it's a new world that they're functioning in. I think a little bit of this sounds to me like, okay, in order for us to operate and function, we have to be... kind of absolved from any kind of potential making money, right? And so we just, I guess we're making that declaration. It's like, well, there may be ways that they could benefit from the scholastic side of this and some of the things that you could potentially get paid for, but we're not going to make that determination. We're basically washing our hands. We're absolved from this. Universities, everyone else, you figure this out. We're this... quasi, like, totally unbiased entity that oversees the great overseer of everything.
Right. Right. Which also means that they also don't – I mean, part of what we learned from the NIL stuff is that the schools and the NCAA, they have a certain amount they can say about what these athletes can and can't do. But a lot of times it's like you cannot – what they can't do is prevent these players from opportunities.
Right.
And that's been something we've seen is that we try to figure out what opportunities are, what the limit of opportunities are. And you've seen million-dollar deals for guys who, frankly, aren't even at the universities anymore where they got those million-dollar deals from those, I think it was Quinn Ewers. I don't know what the – oh, it was like a – was it a gaming company or it was like some – or no, it was a sports memorabilia company that signed him 3 years, $1.3 million for Quinn Ewers. And the guy ended up not going – I mean, he already transferred out of Ohio State, okay? And he had a $60,000 truck that he was given to use from the Ford dealership there. I don't know if you have to give that stuff back immediately upon leaving, but I'm sure there's something like that. But Quinn Ewers is making a business decision. All these guys are making business decisions. When I say these guys, I mean the ones who are at the top of their sport, where the market bears paying these people, men and women both. And you know what we've seen is that you've seen female athletes who are massive on social media platforms that are getting just as big a deals as a lot of these male athletes, or even more so. And good on them. And if the NCAA at any point stepped in and went, yeah, you can't do that, then that's a problem. And the U.S. Labor Department is looking at it going, what are you doing here? You're essentially not allowing these people to work. You know, I mean, you're not allowing these people to take advantage of the fact that the only thing that they have is their name and their image and their likeness that the NCAA has frankly used to the tune of billions of dollars.
You know,
I
just had something hit me. I wonder if I could actually go back and sue the NCAA.
You would, wouldn't you?
And say, well, no, because like when I was a student athlete, when I was enrolled in school and I was on scholarship, I was not allowed to work. A regular student could work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I could not have a job. And so in that time, I was theirs. When I was in school and I was enrolled in school, I basically, if I lived on campus, they provided a place for me to live, and they provided me a small stipend. Believe me, it wasn't anything to write home about.
Actually, you had to write home about it because it wasn't enough money.
Right.
So
then if you lived off campus, you got a small amount of money that no way in the world could you live on that amount of money. There's no way. It was $320.
Right.
It was absolutely impossible.
That was mid-80s money. We're talking – That's thousands of dollars now in 2022.
I guess, but
there are guys now who there are athletes now who we have to be reminded periodically, like, oh, it's actually hard sometimes the amount of money that they're, you know, that stipend isn't a lot, and the food sometimes is not it's not like the training table every day, you know, it's not the same amount of food sometimes when we had our eyes open to some, I think, some Syracuse basketball players who were like, I've gone to sleep hungry before. That's a tough thing, right?
Well, when I was at Utah, there were players coming in with Tupperware dishes who were not on scholarship or whatever, that they go, we got dinner at night.
Right.
And they would go and just pile the as much dinner as they could stick in all these Tupperware dishes.
That's
hilarious. And put it in their backpacks.
Oh my gosh. That's so sad.
But just so they can have food to eat.
I guarantee it's crazy stuff. Even with the deal that BYU has in place with Built Bar, I guarantee there are guys who are like taking a few extras because they're like, yes, this is going in the drawer at home because there's going to be a moment where I crack the fridge open and there's not going to be maybe something there. This is not me trying to paint a picture of like some put upon athlete out there who's not being able to benefit, and now the big bad NCAA is having to pay up. But it has felt like that for a lot of decades, where you have this billion-dollar entity, the NCAA tournament, which is one of the few things that the NCAA tournament can put its name on and it gets all the revenue from. That's a billion-dollar enterprise every year, okay, for the NCAA. Now, what the NCAA cannot regulate is these athletes on a personal level to be able to say you cannot – your name, image, and likeness, all those things that have come down from that deal that have been made with the NIL stuff. I'd love to see. I think it's great. I think it's amazing. The problem is that right now – you are going to see schools that are taking advantage of the fact that the NCAA is running around with its head cut off and doesn't totally know exactly what, how to deal with this thing. The second and third divisions of the NCAA, they're divvied up out of the 100% of funds that come into the NCAA, 90% of it are funneled to the Division I.
Do you know what the problem with the NCAA is? It's dead. It's really just dead. College athletics is not amateur sports. There's massive funding that it's a massive business.
The top end of college football is definitely no longer belongs to the NCAA.
The labor, which is the part of the labor, just has had the short end of the stick.
Yeah,
I mean, really, it's been kind of sweat, slave labor is really what a lot of these players have been. They've basically had minimal wages, minimal compensation.
And then when they rise up, they get put right back down again. They're punished for the dumbest stuff.
How dare you do this?
Think about guys who lost opportunities because the NCAA sanctioned them or the school. Stuff that schools were sanctioned for, that now they're praised for doing, right? And being able to keep their operation going and keep this. And think about how the tune has changed with, when we were at Pac-12 Media Day and we start talking to Devin Lloyd about working with us and doing some stuff, and Coach Whittingham was like, well, I'm going to walk away from this because I can't technically even be a part of this conversation. So, and I don't want to be either. Like, peace out. Like, you guys can figure this out, right? And that stuff, those coaches and the athletic department, on the one hand, there's the compliance part. You have to have a guru who overlooks all these things. Every deal that the Pac-12 that Utah makes, that a Utah player makes, has to run through that compliance. Every deal that BYU makes, etc., and they can shoot things down if it is not part of you're not going to have guys who are repping Budweiser right during the season. That's just not a thing, and so it has to go along with the standards of what the university has. But I mean, other than that. If it's and it has to be market value. That was the funniest thing too, because everybody now goes, well, what's market value? Quinn Ewers is $1 million for going in and doing this thing.
I mean,
whatever the person's willing to pay.
You have head coaches making $10 million a year. Is that market value? I mean, really?
As soon as they're paid that, right?
Exactly. So yeah. So how do you determine what that market value really is? I mean, it is. It's what someone's willing to pay you. I just think it's so hard for the NCAA to kind of sit here and really be in existence and really have any kind of power. I mean, it feels like they just said, look, we still want to be in business. We still want to be a part of this. We've just got to be sure that our side of everything is not a money-making equity type of position. And we're still this independent, it's an academic, it's a student-athlete experience, and that comes first. But recognizing that these players are now going to be compensated, and probably significantly in certain areas, and that any of that is okay at this time with some kind of, limited understanding, right, of, that it fair market value and all these different
things. There's a super small number, Scott, of people who are attending a university, Utah, BYU, Utah State, whomever, even the big ones, Alabama. From the football side of things, there's a very small number who are going to be making their living exclusively off of football for the rest of their lives, or basketball, right? It's a pretty small number in comparison with the number of athletes that are at a university. So having the fact that that this is an institution that is there to serve as an academic institution, number one, but make sure that those athletes that are going to be making their living as the athlete, that while you are taking advantage of making money off of that athlete, whether at your school, that you carve something out for them. This is what this deal is here for. Because the people who are there are getting full scholarships and going to these schools, it's a massive benefit for them to play those sports and to get that education and to go on and do those amazing things. The NCAA has done those ads forever, where they say, hey, there's 200,000 athletes, NCAA athletes across the country, and 98.5% of us are going to go pro in something other than the sport that we play.
Right.
And that's dang true. And that 1.5%, actually helps provide so much money for this institution, the NCAA, that they have had to make an exception for all of these players.
It feels like to me the NCAA, with this declaration or clarification or new constitution,
it's a constitution,
whatever it is, feels like it's really just the beginning. And it'll be interesting to find out where this ends up and how this ultimately evolves. And they've recognized that this is going to be something, this is a moving target, and how we operate and what we do and what we focus on will be something that looks very different from what it's been.
Well, what they've been, what they've been trying to do,
continue to evolve over time.
What they've been trying to do is convince everybody that the college athletics is wholly different from professional sports. But just looking at it from the outside, of course it doesn't look like that. Of course it looks like a professional sport. A bunch of money being made off of TV deals, which is what professional sports is. End of story. The players getting paid a bunch of money also, that's a part of it as well. But when you have people at the top, think about the direction that college football has gone for years.
The transfer portal is also another one.
These are all pieces to this puzzle of the NCAA looking like now. I don't know what the future of the NCAA is going to look like. They're going to meet every week for the next 7 months to try to figure out why they still matter. That's what they're meeting about, basically.
I think
Mark Emmert's
dead.
Meeting with that group every week for the next 7 months to go, how can we be relevant still? Because currently we have no value other than bringing in that billions of dollars or that $1 billion to this quote-unquote not-for-profit, you know, situation.
And I think they're dead. I think they just don't know it. I really do. I think it's – This whole landscape's changed.
Would it be a problem?
I think it's changed. I think it changed a long, long time ago. I just think someone turned the light switch on and everyone said, "Oh, wow, this is what's going on."
When the NCAA stopped handing out a men's or just a football national championship officially, yeah. When was that? I mean, who knows? I mean, because they've been handing out AP. Or Writers Association national championships for the past five decades. But the NCAA at the other divisions hands out a national championship from the NCAA. That wooden placard with the NCAA on it, national champion. But now think about what the college football version of that is. It has nothing to do with the NCAA. It's divorced from it except for that it probably throws it a bone a little bit during those things. But the real moneymakers and all that are not the NCAA. It's the advertisers. It's the college football playoff committee. It's the college football playoff trust. All these things that are part of this that have nothing to do with the NCAA. Basketball is going to go the same way. It's the only thing they're clinging onto for dear life. And everything else really relies on those big sports to funnel that money toward them.
Well, so you have to wonder what will happen with basketball with the NIL, and you have the. I mean, these kids are going to get shoe deals. They're going to get. I mean, it's going to be.
I hope so.
It's going to be crazy.
What about those second tier and third tier sports or the Olympic level sports that they actually cost a lot more money than they actually bring in? What's going to happen to those? Because at some point it's going to be hard to, justify those sports, and that's what BYU is dealing with all the time. Donate, please, please donate, alumni, please donate. Utah does the same thing. Please, can you help out these smaller sports?
Well, they have lacrosse, and it's basically funded by somebody who wanted lacrosse.
Yes,
big
by a billionaire.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's take the break here. We'll come back. I just hope these athletes get what they really deserve. I think before we said that we assumed that that those scholarships were worth it. We were told the lie that it was worth it. And the people who are actually receiving those scholarships, yourself included, Scott, I think people looked at and they went, "Oh no, you aren't living this lap of luxury." It's not until after things take off. All right. You've worked your tail off. Speaking of money, you've worked your tail off. Your retirement should be family and fun, not work and worry. Go to retireteton.com/radio. Get a complimentary retirement ascent plan from Teton Wealth Group. That's retireteton.com/radio. We'll come back. We're going to discuss a little bit about the new hire at the University of Utah. One of Scott's former teammates, he's being onboarded today. going through the same thing you do when you get hired at a new job, doing the whole HR procedure, going through getting your new badge. We're hoping to get Luther Ellis on tomorrow on the program. In the meantime, we'll talk a little bit about what it means to hire these former players into a program at these positions, as these position coaches. More to go right here. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone Sports Network.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. 97.5 1280 The Zone. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Powered by KSLSports.com. Do you get it all in there? There you go. Scott, when you see a guy like Dan Orlovsky, you guys have a similar situation.
How so?
Both played 12 seasons in the NFL. Both spent a good chunk at Detroit. Now, he was a backup for the majority of his career, though, if not the entire thing. Was he ever a starter or anything? I don't even know if he was. Either way.
I've never heard of him.
You're a Detroit Lion alumni.
So?
Don't you guys all, like, well, I don't know, send each other postcards? I don't know what the...
I have no idea. I never watched him play a single down in the NFL.
Okay, so he's one of those guys that, you know, ESPN sort of, they laud as the NFL expert, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of weighing on stuff. So what is the insight that you have as a former player as it pertains to, like, you know, how teams can win these games, you know, going into the divisional rounds, for example? I think about Utah hiring Luther Ellis as their defensive line coach, but it's a guy who's also been, you know, you can't just go, hey, I used to play here and then start, and I used to play in the NFL and start coaching at a high level. You got to go through your paces, you know, and coach at different places and go through this whole thing. And you have to? Well, I'm just saying, I think that's.
I don't think you have to.
Well,
I think a lot of people make you.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's to cover all their bases, because then you might have a Ty Detmer type situation.
I think Ty Detmer's a good coach. I think Ty Detmer would have been very good at BYU. I don't think he was.
He wasn't very good at BYU.
I don't necessarily agree that he wasn't that good. I don't. Here's the thing, okay. He didn't have really good quarterbacks to start with. They were not very good. Now, and I don't know the people around him as far as a coaching staff, how good that was either. I'll give you that. But I don't think Ty Detmer was a bad coach, or I don't think he didn't know what he was doing. I don't necessarily agree with that. But here's what, with former players, if you're a coach and you're not a former player, there are some guys that resent that.
They kind of go, what do you know?
Well, no, because when Luther Ellis walks in the door,
instant
Luther
credibility.
Ellis has instant credibility.
Yeah.
When you're a guy that, you know, maybe you played a little bit in college, you know, a little bit, who knows? You know, a lot of coaches don't have a lot of playing experience. The player goes, you've got to prove to me that you know something. Dan Marino used to say, don't coach me until you've played in this league for 10 years, because you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know. And that was his mindset. Whether he was right or wrong about that, I'm just telling you, it was how he goes.
Sounds like a guy who's open to learning.
Well,
that's that ego situation you're always talking
maybe
about.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, right? I don't know. But so whether Luther Ellis can coach or not, you walk in the door, and I believe you can, because I think as a player, there's a massive amount of information that you can share, an insight that you can share, that someone who hadn't done it just doesn't have.
But, you know, it's pretty unique.
They don't have it.
It's pretty unique what Utah's doing. Hiring Luther Ellis yesterday as a defensive line coach, as that interior D tackle coach. And then, you know, Quinton Ganther also being hired last week. And these are guys who, I mean, you don't see the defensive coordinator is one of your former, you know, defensive backs at the school, Morgan Scalley. You don't see that often, that like a good chunk of the coaching staff on the defensive side, or like in, a couple of your assistants, a handful of your assistants went to the school and are kind of legendary players at the school. In Luther Ellis's case, he's going to be by far the most like NFL decorated. Credibility. Yeah, sure. Most decorated of a guy that's played there.
Luther was probably the first really big time guy that went to Utah. He really was.
What do you mean?
Well, like Luther Ellis was this massive find for Utah, and when the Coach McBride era started, when Utah football really started to get on the map, Luther Ellis was probably one of the first players to really kind of put it on the map. Like big time players, all American type of,
like you knew he was going to have choice. He was going to have an NFL career.
He was a massive difference maker for Utah.
So what does that, not just the credibility part, but what does that say about Kyle Whittingham hiring, you know, big names that went to the school here in Utah?
And Coach Whittingham's like, I'm not just going to hire some big name. I want to know if you can coach. But it's beyond coaching in college sports. It's really a kind of a psychologist. It's really a surrogate parent for a lot of these players. It's really a surrogate babysitter. I mean, you got guys that don't want to go to class, that don't want to get up and get into the lifting program. And you have to make sure that they're on board and
like getting them to class.
And if you're a position coach, you're like, you're not responsible for one. You're responsible for, you know, a whole unit of players, maybe 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 players, depending on what position group you are. Now, it should be easy for Luther because he's got 12 kids, you know, to manage.
As a former player, you have
a unique experience. Now, some former players are terrible coaches. I'm not saying all former players are just great coaches. It's the former players that can describe and teach, and can share with their players information to make them better, to get them prepared, to have them perform at a high level, and to actually do it. And not all players can do this. A lot of great players go, I can't tell you how I do this. I just do it. I was just given the ability. I just do it. Some guys that kind of had to work for it can really talk you through the technique and the position and understanding game situations and understanding how to deal with off-field things. I mean, Luther Ellis for Utah is a massive hire because he has that former player credibility. He walks in the door and people are going to listen from day one. And they're either going to pay more attention, they're going to buy into what he's selling a lot easier. But he's also this guy that is great at understanding the mental part of this and understanding the emotional highs and lows of these players. And really, he can connect to these players on so many levels that I have to believe his players would just absolutely love playing for him. And when you get that, when you get players that buy into you and what you're doing and you get great effort from them, then everyone does well, and you get a person like Luther, who's a really good person to start with, and he's a guy that went to Utah, and so it matters to him, and so you get these players buying into the program, and that's what Kalani's tried to do at BYU. That was the philosophy. Like, people need to understand the culture here, and we need to educate and indoctrinate people to this culture. And when you have a lot of former players who are not just players, you know, but there are players that are very skilled coaches and understand all of that together, that's only going to do nothing but make your program so much better, so much more dynamic. And you have Luther Ellis go, yeah, I was in the Pro Bowl. I played in the NFL. I was a first-round draft choice. I came to Utah. I can get you there. But along with that, I can make you a better person. I can, you know, and I mean, Luther Ellis is an easy sell. Luther Ellis selling Utah football is an easy sell, and that just does massive. It's a massive, massive get and benefit for the University of Utah.
You know, how many times did we talk with, with Devin Cavusi this year about that defensive line room and Sione Poa, who is they're. D-line coach from this last year, same thing. NFL credentials, played in the league for 8 years, went to Utah, but only coached for a couple of seasons, right? And so replacing that with somebody who is arguably an even bigger name that went to the NFL, I think that's a huge deal. I mean, bring guys in. I think about all the coaches that you ever had, the majority of them probably didn't have any ties to Utah. They just worked their way up the coaching. They worked their way up the coaching ladder, and they.
Are you talking about when I was at Utah?
Yeah, when you were at Utah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like
Fred Graves was a former Utah player.
I think a lot of times it's still a little
most
bit,
of them not.
I think it's a school's dream to be able to say Kalani Sitake, you played here, and you're going to be the head coach here. Amazing. It's a perfect fit, right? To be able to have an amazing coach who also went to that school, in BYU's case in particular, where they go. You know, we have certain things that we have to abide by. The honor code is this, and your head coach gets all that, right? And they understand it, and they're on board. And in Utah's case, like, you get Luther Ellis coming in there to that defensive tackle
when
he understands.
When Lavelle Edwards was the head football coach at BYU, he tried to get the very best coaches he could get. He tried to get coaches that were better than he was.
Yeah.
And you see that, you know, and it's hard. Some of these coaches go, look, I want control of things. I don't want, there's a lot of politics involved in coaching, and you don't want a coach in the background bad mouthing you or saying, oh, you know, that guy, you don't want that. And so you want people that are going to buy into what you say, but you also don't want, you know, a lot of these coaches say, I don't want coaches smarter than me because they may assert my authority. The players may revolt and go, you know, Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka is a good example. Like, Buddy Ryan did not respect Mike Ditka. And a lot of people thought Buddy Ryan was a better coach. And the whole defense just loved Buddy Ryan.
It was always a
and
weird
if you remember
thing when they,
85 when they carried both of them off
both
the field.
Both of them off the field.
Yeah, and you hate that as
and
a coach.
And Ditka was like, he hated it.
Well, I mean, of course he hated it. You know, but Buddy Ryan was a great, I mean, he was a revolutionary coach in football. So you need a lot of confidence as a head coach to hire a former player and someone of Luther Ellis's stature, which I think Kyle Whittingham is at. He's like, look, I'm looking to get the best people I possibly can, and I don't care if they maybe know more than me, but that's a real thing. And Lavelle was really good at that. He was really good at just finding the best coaches he possibly could be because sometimes these coaches go, I'm just going to bring my buddies in here. I'm going to bring people in, you know, and – because believe it or not, there's a lot of position coaches that are not necessary. They're not critical. But there are some that are. And so you can hire kind of your cronies and people that are going to support you and be behind you. And that's a real thing. So I love to see that someone like Luther, the caliber of player he was and what he fits into the program at Utah, I think it's a massively huge hire for Utah. A no-brainer, really.
Yeah, and I think it's cool. I just love the idea of somebody coming back to the school that they started it all at. It's a big deal. That's why it's such a bummer when it didn't work out with Ty Detmer, right? I mean, it's just like, ugh.
It is, because then you think, well, former players are not good coaches, and I don't think that's the case. I mean, that's what people, you know, that's right. What people, and I, yeah. And I still believe Ty is a good coach.
All right, we'll take the break here. First, Built Bar, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, or salted caramel. 100% real chocolate, 100% real delicious. Order yours today. Built.com is the website. Save 10%. You enter zone at the checkout. It's Built Bar, built.com. We'll come back. More to go right here on Unrivaled. Stay with us as we talk a little bit about the NFL coach. What's the best type of NFL coach to play for? Scott has thoughts on this. And as you see a lot of the coaching carousel get changed up, what's the best version of a coach for a 2022 locker room in the NFL? Stay right here with us. More to go. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Attention. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell.
You know what sounds good to me?
Oh, what?
The Salt Lake Rays.
What are you talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, some baseball action. Some yeah. Major League Baseball coming in.
How the
I'm sorry,
the,
I was picturing
the Tampa Bay Rays
yeah.
are saying we want to split between Montreal and Tampa.
Right, yeah, yeah. And we have 19 fans that come down to see us in Tampa. We'll get at least 2,000 who will come out to Montreal.
Why don't you move the team to Salt Lake City?
A city that actually will...
Would actually
I think we,
show up.
Of all the professional sports, I think the NFL... Eventually, I think this would be a great market. I don't know if it is right now. I don't know if it could support
for
it.
For the NFL?
Yeah. At some point, it could.
Have you been to Green Bay, Wisconsin?
I know. I'm just saying that I think that it'd be
you're
a
not
hard
looking,
sell.
You're not looking at Evanston and Vernal, and you're not looking at Preston, Idaho. All these places, they'll show up if there's an NFL team.
People will come, Ray.
And Wendover? They'll
hand over the money.
They'll come. Yeah.
They'll have such.
I mean, these NFL players could probably promote Wendover.
Brush them away from the face. Yeah, I get it. You can't compare everything to Green Bay. Green Bay is if Green Bay applied for an NFL franchise now
mm-hmm.
versus the 78 years ago.
I don't want to hear this. Oh well, they just can't support it. I'm not buying that.
Okay.
Folks
that being
here
said,
will
I
support
was just saying,
a team.
I think that people would pack out a baseball stadium immediately. I think the Bees are one of those AAA teams that are awesome, that people love. And I think that if you did a Major League Baseball team here, you would already have more support here than they get in Tampa. You'd already have more support.
What do you have, 45,000 seats stadium?
I mean, they do less than that in baseball. You 30, don't even need
38?
I mean, like Yankee Stadium and Fenway, they'll put that many in there. I'm trying to think. Safeco, where where I went growing up, or even when I was a smaller kid, we'd go to those Ranger games. I think those were like 20,000 seats. Safeco was like 38, and they got 38,000 people in that thing for years, every year.
Put it right there in Draper. That's what a lot of people are talking about.
Why Draper? Where the
prison.
You're talking about where the prison is.
Yeah, get rid of the prison, put it in a baseball field.
I thought you meant like right next to Corner Canyon High School. I'm like, there's no
the
real
Salt
estate
Lake
over there,
Chain
buddy.
Gang.
That's oh, now we're talking.
That's what they could be.
See, Rays doesn't make sense.
Well, yeah, like the Great Salt Lake Rays.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. Just because it's a saltwater animal doesn't mean it would last more than 5 minutes.
Well, you want to call them the Utah Lake Carp? You want to call them the Carp?
You're like so big on calling whatever team
carpe,
that comes here.
Carpe diem.
Oh, my
god. Seize
gosh.
The day.
There's no carp in – there's not a thing that's alive in the Great Salt Lake except for the brine shrimp.
Well, there's carp in Utah Lake.
Could you imagine? An invasive species we're trying to get rid of,
swim down the Jordan
and we name
River.
Our baseball team after it.
How about the June sucker?
The amount of jokes that we'd get. Oh, my goodness. The chub. Isn't that a thing?
Yeah.
Isn't that a fish, too?
Yeah, it is.
Gosh, we just get stalled out on what we'd call the baseball team, and then we go, never mind. You just always go straight out to, because you always go, oh, you ought to do the Pioneers. You always get to that point. I think you've
Why
got
did,
better.
How could you disrespect the pioneer heritage of the state of Utah?
I'm not.
Oh, the Pioneers.
Is that the voice I give
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it is.
Like you sound like Julia Child. Oh, dear. What's
you stuff the Cornish hen.
Why
don't
earth?
Be afraid of it.
Okay, I'm not. Look, the pioneer heritage is a real thing. It does not evoke.
The spirit and the
some toughness
and the toughness and these folks they tamed the West. They walked here.
You know what you do because you don't just have a. It's not like you because I think a lot of times mascots will be if it's depicting a human it'll be predominantly like a Aggies. I think of like Aggie. They have like a grumpy guy with a mustache, or like the Cowboys, grumpy guy with a mustache. Pioneers have a man and a bonnet on it. You got to have the guy with the suspenders.
They have a pitchfork.
Yes, and then you have that pioneer woman who's arguably as tough. She's holding a baby in one hand.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And a baseball mitt in the other.
It's got a broom, and a baby.
Boom.
And the guy's got a pitchfork and a.
Come on, man. Let's do this.
Maybe she's holding a baseball bat and a baby.
You know that like grumpy face they do on mascots? Urgh.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do.
Grumpy face pioneer.
Yeah. You know, I'm related to my great great grandmother.
I mean,
No. I'm not talking about like a great aunt or something like this.
You say Nine Kevin times Bacon? Or
no,
what?
No. No, it's even because you know Hans Olsen, his uncle Merlin,
uh-huh,
was on Little House on the Prairie.
Yes, also a pretty good football player.
My great 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 grandmother is Nellie Owens,
the real one,
the one
the actual person,
like the one who's depicted as the mean shop right. owner's daughter,
yeah.
right? Which yeah. would mean that the shop owners were my great 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 grandparents,
right?
But she was she ended up marrying a Keery. She was Nellie Owens Keery, dude. I got that pioneer heritage pumping through the old veins over here, buddy. So I'm all for it.
All right, you know who I'm related to?
Who?
Philo T. Farnsworth.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. TV guy.
Do you get any royalties off of that? Or?
No, I'm too far removed.
So you're related to Philo T. Farnsworth.
You know who else I'm related to?
Lavelle Edwards.
It's just a great story.
Everybody is. I know. Dude.
Well, look at him. He's just kind of got that every man's face.
Grandpa Lavelle, man.
I mean, Lavelle was actually kind of a grumpy mascot. I mean, that's what he
yes.
looked. That's what he looked like. He looked like Popeye. Yeah,
he looked like Popeye, but with the
yes, he did
because he had the forearms.
Yes,
and you give him a sailor tattoo on the arm there, and a can of spinach in the old hand, and a corncob pipe.
Yeah,
corncob pipe against the honor code.
You get
though.
That one eye that would close.
Yeah, he had the look. All right, we'll take the break. Hey, I think Tim Lacombe's going to join us next. The coach going to sort of try to walk us through what the heck's going on with this Jazz team. Boy, it must have been a tough post game. You go through the pregame, and I heard it. He and Jake going through and saying, "Hey, yeah, you got to get a win against this team. Here's how you do it." Bada bing, bada boom, and then post game. Oof, that must have been tough to get through. We'll talk to Coach Tim Lacombe coming up just around the corner here. More to go. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
This period, you know, every game's been a little bit different. Try to take something from every game. For me, I kind of maintain the same overall thought that, you know, I want us to be at our best at the right time. And we're clearly not at our best right now, regardless of the variety of challenges that each game provides. We haven't played at the level that we want on both ends of the court. That's something for us to own and understand and not just correct, but improve upon.
Quinn Snyder after the loss to the Houston Rockets last night. Tough one to swallow, I think, for Jazz fans who are watching that thing. Hoping to get the team back on track before an extremely hard next 10 days for this team. Scott Mitchell across from me, former NFL quarterback. I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us on Unrivaled. So, kicking things off as we always do, though. We're gonna jump right in here, have this discussion a little bit. The cut is where we start the program off every hour, so let's do it.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The cut brought to you by RGS Exteriors and Construction. It's a new year. Does your home need that new look? RGS Exteriors can give you that look for 2022. Stucco, brick, vinyl, James Hardy siding. Give them a call, 801-280-3110. That's 801-280-3110. RGS Exteriors and Construction. What's going on with the Jazz, Scott? I mean, last night you're watching that game. I know that you were like me. You went. Well, I think you came in more grumpy today about the Jazz than I did. You're usually the more, glass half full kind of guy. I'm usually the glass half empty guy, but you came in and you were like, this team stinks right now.
Well, I appreciate Quinn Snyder saying, look, whatever it is, whatever challenges, basically saying, look, we had guys out, we had guys playing, you know, maybe not guys playing a lot. And they just didn't make it happen. They just didn't get it done. And instead of making excuses, he just said, we got to own it. We got to own that this is unacceptable and this isn't what we're all about. But we also know that we'd rather be playing our best basketball at this, you know, during the playoffs and into the playoffs than right now. And whatever gets you to that point, you know, maybe it's going through these lumpy times. I don't know. But
would you call them lumpy times?
Lumpy times. It's like eating that cream of wheat, you know, which I like. But man, trying to get that cream of wheat without lumps in it, and you get those, and they're hidden. You can't see them. It all looks smooth, but then you get those lumps in your cream of wheat.
As soon as I think we're going to go one direction in the show, then cream of wheat comes up.
Yeah, I've talked about cream of wheat for a long time.
Maybe
I liked oatmeal because oatmeal never, you didn't get the lumps in oatmeal. You make it right, you put a little brown sugar and some butter. Whew.
What was that? Huh.
Nothing is
better.
Did you
say butter?
Yeah, melted butter. And yeah, have you never had that?
I mean, I didn't. Brown I wouldn't sugar. Have thought it. I mean, yeah, brown sugar is great.
And butter.
I didn't know you'd put butter in your oatmeal. I didn't know you did that. I can imagine. I mean, listen, butter's going to make most things taste
well,
good.
Well, yeah, you think it's going to be bad?
Come on.
No.
Come on, man.
What do you put in? What do you put butter in that would actually make it bad? That's what I want to know. Melted.
Ooh, melted butter? Yeah. Let me think on that. Let me think of that. Okay? Joining us right now on the program, he might be able to help us out with this. He's the Roastradamus. Another night. I think you're 18-2 now on the season, Coach, with the 111 points plus prediction of to get people those Arby's roast beef sandwiches. That being said, that's not a sandwich people want to eat after the Jazz lose a game like that. Come on.
Well, you could actually use it to, you know, settle down and console yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
I tend to eat when I'm stressed out.
That's a good point.
I eat during the show. I'm having to deal with Alex for 3 hours, and it just stresses me out.
I can't believe. Yeah,
I'm actually drinking
you
butter on the show. Is what I'm doing. Just anything just to just calm it, my nerves.
I would say melted butter would not be good in soak.
In what?
Diet Coke.
Oh, yeah. He found something, Scott. See? Told you.
Well, the warm and the cold doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work at all. Well,
and it just would get all. But, you know, I was just thinking because I'm drinking a Diet Coke, which is typical. That's usually very, have one.
That's you know what's good typical. In Diet Coke, though, is like a lime or a lemon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, Scott's tough to be with because he'll go, can I get a lime in that? And they'll go, what about a lemon? And Scott goes, I guess. If you have dinner with Scott, he's very particular about the.
I'm a lime guy too.
I know.
I'm a lime guy too,
yeah.
Scotty.
Yeah, it's different flavor.
Tim, last night I was listening to you guys do the pregame show. You and Jake Scott, of course, always do a fantastic job on the pre, half, and post. I didn't get to hear you do the post game. I did listen to the postcast that Booner and Locke did after the game, and it's just. There's one thing to be like, hey, here's how you beat this Houston team. They're not equipped to handle a Jazz team like this. And I think in previous years, we definitely thought that. I think now there's not a game the rest of the season on the docket where you could go, no, they got this one, because of the teams that they've lost to in this stretch.
Yeah, it's been really strange. Quinn brought up a unique, you know, a good point last night, obviously. You know, there are outliers in this streak. And so I don't know that you can kind of look at the streak as a whole and have, you know, a great deal of crazy concern when Gobert doesn't play four of those games. And, you know, it just changes so much. But, yeah, last night was one that I just felt like, you know, that Houston really kind of wanted more. And that's a tough spot to be. You know, I think the Jazz have really had opportunities to put the throttle down and blow somebody out, and they've lost leads, and we've seen it before to a team that, you know, shouldn't really be as competitive with this Jazz team. So it's a unique time right now for sure, but certainly got to feel a little bit of angst for, you know, if you're watching things.
Speaking of this time, it's getting close to the trade deadline. Of course, there's lots of discussion about potential trades across the NBA and certainly with the Jazz. What kind of impact do you think that has on some of these players and how they're playing? Like, does it have a negative impact, a positive? What do you think is going through these players' minds?
I would think it would have to be negative. You know, I mean, you know what it's like to be in a locker room and be with teammates you really like. You know, the one thing I've talked about for the last couple of years is how good, from a chemistry standpoint, you know, this team, they're not all, you know, they're not all buddies, but they all figure out a way to get along. You know, the locker room's actually been, in my mind, a strength. And so I would imagine it's probably part of what's working against them. I actually ran into Tony Jones, who I love with The Athletic. Saw him last night on the way out, and I just asked him his thought. You know, that was one of the things he brought up, was the uncertainty, right? And so I think a lot of factors at play, but really the most important thing is this is the same team that won, you know, 8 in a row and looked like much of the season like one of the best offensive teams the league's ever seen. So, you know, it can't completely overreact because there have been things that have happened, but I do think the talk around trades, I think the expectation, right? I think the expectation to be a championship team, I think those guys feel that. I think that's part of why they're struggling at home, too.
Tim, one of the things I think we watched last night in that game was usually a time when the Jazz put the screws to a team like Houston, who can have a decent first half, maybe even a decent first quarter like we saw out of them. But then they tend to run out of gas, and that's where the Jazz kind of put the screws to teams, is always have seem to have had a better, you know, defense, of course, but they've had such a great offense this year too, and both of those things seem to be lacking last night. And really, I don't want to do the whole, like you were saying, I don't want to buy into the last 6 or 7 that all those games are created equal. But I do think that last night felt different from the other losses.
Yeah, it was just I don't know how to qualify it, but it was very difficult at times for them to get in any kind of rhythm. You know, I've said it all year long. When the ball moves, I think that's an essential part of this team functioning well. And oftentimes, the way teams guard them, switching, and it stagnates the team. They end up, you know, one or two guys touching on a possession. And I just think that has to have some bearing. But it is the team that has really gone on fire this year at times. So it's in there. It's just a matter of figuring out how to get that rhythm back and how to get that chemistry back out on the floor. And then all the while you're dealing with, you know, people talking about trades and positioning for a championship. So it's a lot to think about.
Speaking of trades and positioning for a championship, I mean, this is a team that had the best record in the NBA a year ago. They were up 2-0, if I think people forget, on the Clippers in the second round. You know, they were close. I mean, they were really close to getting to the Western Conference Finals. What is the solution? Is there a trade out there? Do the Jazz need to trade? Where do you think the Jazz need to go before this trade deadline with this team to make it in a position to go for a championship?
Well, I mean, I think the dire need, you know, is either kind of a refocusing on the perimeter and guarding a little better. You know, I think it's attention to detail stuff more than anything. I don't want to ever indict this team as not playing hard, because that's not what I see. I see also guys that maybe aren't as connected or locked in to certain things. I mean, last night, a perfect example, Garrison Matthews, rookie out of Lipscomb. The one thing that dude can really do is shoot the three. And, you know, the scouting report was, don't let him get a three or make him dribble. And, you know, he ended up getting 10 threes off last night. Uh-huh. So certainly there's some concern there, right? And then at the end of the game, when the Jazz are doing a great job actually locking offensively, and the ball gets skipped, and Eric Gordon somehow ends up with it and is wide open, and he just kind of applies that dagger. You know, it's things like that I think get a little bit, you know, you wonder, is there a guy out there? And certainly there's a guy out there, but I think you run the risk, obviously, of in the middle of a season introducing somebody new. Certainly been done before, and it's propelled teams beyond what they're capable of doing. So, you know, there's a couple of guys out there, you know, that are talked about a ton. Jeremy Grant's one of them. You know, he's a guy who is in Detroit and he's kind of languishing away. Was with Denver, and he's just a big, long wing who's really active. You know, and I've heard his name thrown around. And certainly a guy like Marcus Smart, I've heard his name. You know, a guy who's maybe just a little bit different piece than what they have, not so much a polished, skilled offensive player, but more of a, you know, I'm going to get down and guard and shut somebody down type of guy. Because the real truth of this story is Royce is the guy who gets that assignment, but Royce is not necessarily a lockdown defender. He's probably the best perimeter defender the Jazz have. But that, I think that's an area they could address if they chose to do so.
Tim Lacombe, you can hear him, of course, pre-half and post-games on the Utah Jazz Radio Network. He and Jake Scott do an awesome job leading into and then taking over for Locke and Booner after those games. This is just a weird time, I guess. I think that Jazz fans are used to there being – it feels like – is there a discipline issue too? Because then there's a part where guys are talking about how poorly that they've defended. And in Rudy's case, he said, there were times I didn't have my teammates back last night. You know, this is after he's criticized his team or some teammates about how they haven't played enough defense. And so is there a lack of discipline or any sort of problems in the locker room that we're not seeing that I know that we fear the most as we watch this team? It's the one thing that everybody goes, please don't let there be any sort of issue in the locker room. But is that boiling over to something like this?
I don't think so. I get a pretty good read, you know, from the people that we're able to talk to, and then obviously listening to the players and coaches talk night after night after night. You know, I was pretty impressed when Rudy kind of had his issue with the team this week, and Donovan was asked about it. And I think it would have been an opportunity if wanted to. Donovan could have blown things up, you know.
Yeah, and he shot it down.
But he just is like, hey, that's how Rudy operates. And so, no, I don't think there's that. And I wouldn't use the term necessarily discipline problem. I think the way that I kind of see this thing, and it's maybe a glass half full type thing, is, you know, that last year they were on top of their game the majority of the year, and they kind of steamrolled through the league. There wasn't a whole lot of pressure in it. I mean, they're one of those teams that kind of came on the scene, everything started to click. They were a little proactive in the way they shot threes, and I think it took the league by surprise. I think this year, you know, there's a lot of film on a very similar team, and I think there's always adjustments that are made, and it really is the desire to really kind of fight through obstacles. And, you know, I think there's times in a season where that is easier and there's times where it's more difficult. But Quinn has said all year long, and it's the piece I take solace in, is we want to be playing our best basketball in April. And if you think about it, the Jazz could be undefeated right now. You know, just say they're undefeated for whatever reason. And April would still be looming, you know, and everybody would be like, well, yeah, but can they do it, right? It may not be a bad course of action to kind of feel your way through the season, figure out a way to get into that nice matchup, and then let momentum take over from there. As I said, we've seen this team do great things over the last couple of years, and we know what they're capable of. So it's not one of those deals where you need to give up hope. I think it's more of a journey. The season's a journey, and right now the Jazz are just at a lull.
What do you think it takes then to be playing their best basketball in April? From where they are today?
I think everybody just getting back to the basics. You know, as crazy as it sounds, this team really would benefit from everybody just recommitting to keep the ball in front of them, you know, doing a better job of guarding the ball, being more aware of assignments and, you know, the communication piece. I know a lot of guys have talked about it. I've heard Rudy, Joe, Donovan, and they're pretty honest that they're decent communicating at times and other times they're not. And I think if you're going to be a championship level team, it's those little things. This team's got a ton of talent. They've got veteran leadership. They've got, you know, star power. What they really, I believe, just get back to the basics. And I think that would be a real positive thing, because I think ball movement on offense and sharing it and not caring who shoots it, you know, we've seen that from this team. It's really fun. And then defensively, the ability, you know, over the years to be able to lock people down, you know, to have Rudy kind of anchor everything and have him protect the rim, you know. So those types of things are the things I look at. I don't think it needs to be a mass change or overhaul. I think it's more just getting back to the basics of what makes this team good.
Tim Lacombe, you can hear the coach on the pre-half and post-game shows right here on the Utah Jazz Radio Network. Boy, always makes me feel a little bit better about things when we talk to you, Tim. So I appreciate that, because then I start to feel a little bit better about everything. I thought Scott always brings a silver lining, but you always have the positive vibes, man. I love it.
But I'm telling you, seriously, think about it. If the Jazz were absolutely killing it right now, what would you be thinking about?
Well, we did last
year. That's what we did last year.
This time last year, we were like, this team, pretty unbeatable, pretty amazing. And by the time they got to that first seed by the end of the year, it was kind of like, you didn't feel amazing about it, and then here we are. And there you go. So.
Yeah, so there may be a different way about this, right? And I think that's what's great about sport. You can tweak things, you can try things, but I still have really good hope for this team. I think whether they make a move or don't make a move, you know, the ownership and leadership is solid, and I do believe there's a lot of guys in that locker room that care. So it's just getting back to brushing a few of those things up.
His opinions are relatively solid. His hair is almost always on point. Tim Lacombe on the program. Thanks for being with us, Coach. We appreciate it.
Love you guys. Thanks.
All right, there you go. Gosh, I love talking to Tim. You know why? Because he's got the perspective. He's got the perspective, man. I heard it last night, too. Locke said the same thing. He goes,
does have good hair, too.
He does have good hair.
Yeah.
And Locke said it. He goes, look, would you rather them doing this? Would you rather them doing this stuff in game 45 or 85?
I use the example of the Milwaukee Bucks. I get it. I understand.
Yeah, but we were saying all that stuff before last night, and then last night happened. I'm fragile, man. I'm like a leaf in the wind. I can get shifted around, no problem. I will change in an instant. So that's why I'm glad to have like those solid rock kind of people like Tim Lacombe kind of talking me off the ledge a little bit. Let's take the break. We'll come back. We've got more to talk about. We've got the NFL roundup around the corner, divisional playoffs right around the corner. I've got some insane numbers about what Tom Brady has done in these divisional playoffs over the years. The Super Bowl numbers are one thing. But this game in particular on this weekend, this is Tom Brady's weekend, man. So we'll come back. We'll talk about that. Much more to go. Stay with us. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
Louisville.
And the other guy on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone. The Zone Sports Network, NFL Roundup, right here on Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, he's the former NFL quarterback, in case you're wondering. NFL Roundup brought to you by LHM Used Car Supermarket. Over 1,000 used vehicles in inventory. Shop online, LHMUsedCars.com. You said it yesterday, Scott. I'd be surprised if Dak Prescott doesn't get fined for what he said about the referee or about what he said about the refs, because there was trash that was getting thrown onto the field when the Cowboys were running in the locker room. And he said, you know, that's low class. It's ridiculous. And then they said, no, they were throwing it at the fans. And I don't remember what the exact quote was. It was basically like, oh, good for them. They know, you know, they see how we did. And yesterday he did the backpedal. Oh, I should have never said the things that I said. These referees, they work hard. It was a stupid in the moment. You know, write it down for all the stuff that your PR firm says you have to say as an apology. And he did it. Doesn't matter. Got fined $25,000 today by the league. You knew that the league wasn't going to let this thing fly.
The league isn't going to let it fly, but that's not the issue. The issue is Dak Prescott needs to understand this better. You're gonna attract flies with honey more than you are with whatever, right?
Doo-doo?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess. Well, they stick.
They like doo-doo,
but they just don't stick as well.
They like the doo-doo, too. Yeah.
You can manipulate the officials. You can. And
Tom Brady says he does.
I know. And they're human beings. Okay? They are susceptible to failing just like anyone else. And so you know you're going to get calls that don't make a lot of sense sometimes and don't go your way. How you respond to it, how you interact with the officials is very important. And when you're a person like Dak Prescott, who has, you know, he's a well-known player in the NFL,
the officials come in and they're fanboy or girl, because they're female officials now. They're like, man, I'm reffing.
But there's guys who don't like Tom Brady. And there are guys who don't like Tom Brady, maybe. Or maybe they said something to him and they get away.
Not officials, but look, I learned when I was a player that I treated them, you know, with a lot of respect, and to the point of being a little bit sappy. I was like, I don't care.
Now, well, like, you'd start crying?
No, I was like, man, that is a great call right there. You guys are doing an amazing job today. You know, appreciate all the work you guys do for us.
The patronizing quarterback.
I know you got a tough job. Like, I get it. I know it's a tough deal, and I know
you're talking to him like he's the help at the stadium. Like he's picking up your garbage in the locker room.
He is the help at the stadium. His job is vital. Think of how much power an official yields, because so much of the call
waiting on those calls
is subjective. Holding's subjective. It's not. It's like.
Does it take a couple of times?
Pass
of you
interference
going,
is subjective. Pass roughing the passer is subjective.
Did it take a couple of times of you going, hey, they're holding our tight end, man? Did it take a couple of times, and then they start looking at it, or what?
No, that's the conversation. You say, hey, look,
take a look. Just keep your eyes open.
It looked like that situation right there. He might have been held a little.
So you couldn't just straight up say, hey. Like,
I would not swear at them. I would not tell them
Tom Brady
says an idiot and stupid.
Tom Brady says that he gets after these refs. In fact, he gets pretty aggressive in the way that he talks to these referees, and says, and he admitted in an article this week that he gets away with talking smack to the refs and talking back to the refs. Quote, I'm kind of a pain in there. So, I mean, he straight up says it. Those biases are there. He says he gets away with it. There's a perception around the football league. This is one of those interviews with Jim Gray. There's a perception around the league that you get treated a little bit differently, that you're able to get away with more when it comes to talking to the refs about calls or not getting calls. And he said, yeah, absolutely. I do know that the officials probably let me get away with a lot more unsportsmanlike conducts.
I don't know if it's
aggressive. Unsportsmanlike conducts are nothing to mess with.
Yeah,
talking smack to the other team and talking smack to the refs when I don't think I get the right call, I'm kind of a pain in their butt. But if you already didn't know that, if that's what he's saying. He knows he's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, but
guess what?
I think Tom Brady's a smart guy, though. I mean,
he knows what the edge is. Yeah. But his edge is further than you know, Jalen Hurts.
Oh, yeah. Jalen Hurts has no edge.
No edge. No, these refs go, no. I barely have heard of you.
If you breathe the wrong way, you're getting a bad. Don't even look at me a little cross-eyed. Don't even like widen your eyes or roll your eyes or do anything.
Excuse me?
Right. In fact, don't even look at me straight in the eyes. Just avert your gaze from me.
What I've learned about Tom Brady that I don't think I knew the first, you know, the first 20 years of his career. What I didn't know the first, you know, maybe until the last handful of seasons, I didn't know how salty he was. On the field, the guy is absolutely sour. If he doesn't get those calls, he is in the ref's ears. He's been over at the other sidelines dropping F-bombs on the other team's sidelines and their coaches before.
Look, it's how he gets his edge.
He absolutely is an insane competitor. Like, he is absolutely salty. He thinks he's not getting calls in games. He's grumpy at the refs during the game if he's not getting those calls. He's dropping the F-bomb on the coach or on the other sideline if they're coming at him. He's giving them right back. It's like you watch him play, and I get it. I mean, it's funny. He's one of those guys. Next up on the NFL roundup here, Scott. Mike McCarthy says he has confidence in himself to be able to win as an NFL head coach. Uh-oh. Those are famous last words, Scott. Those are like the worst things to say.
I don't know why people
have to.
I'm
pretty good, man.
It's just like, why do you have to convince people of this? Why do you even have to say it?
I mean, this whole last week.
Like, you wouldn't even get a job. You wouldn't even get hired if they thought, no, I don't believe I can win.
This whole last week.
Please hire me and pay me millions of dollars every year. Come on.
This whole last weekend after they lost. He's been going up and down.
That's somebody who's not secure.
He's not secure.
He's
the Cowboys head coach.
I don't care.
Of course he's not. Of course he's not secure. Jerry Jones is your boss. You'll never feel secure.
Jerry Jones is not a difficult guy to be around.
Case in point, Jason Garrett had a job forever.
He's actually pretty patient about things. Jerry Jones is not an owner that I go, "Oh, I'm concerned about that."
I think Mike McCarthy's biggest problem is he has been critical about everybody else. He starts to point at other things. The referee made this bad call. The one yesterday, did you see the one yesterday was? Our players, I could sense it during the pregame prayer. Did you hear what he said? I could sense it in the pregame prayer. They were way more nervous than I'd seen them in other games this year. And that got to them. And I'm thinking, you can't put all this on everybody else. The players are too nervous. The refs didn't make the right call at the end there. I had it all figured out, but the players didn't play well. The refs didn't call the game well. I'm not the problem. I have confidence in myself as an NFL head coach. Uh-huh. Famous last words.
Sounds like a lot of excuses.
Sounds like a lot of stuff. Those are all the things that are going to get you fired.
You know, I just figured something out.
What do you got?
Jim Harbaugh actually could go back to the NFL. And I'll tell you why. I don't think he wants to. I think there's some coaches like Nick Saban, Urban Meyer. I think they go, I'd rather be in college. I'd rather be in college for one reason. I can control everything. I can control the players that I get in, and I don't have to, you know, I don't have to hope that we draft the right guy. And I hope that we have this budget, and so we can only get so many guys here. Where in college, man, they get everybody. They get the best player. You know, it's a better deal for these guys in college, much more control. The problem that I think they're running into, and I think this is the challenge for Nick Saban, I think it's why he hates everything today, is NIL and the transfer portal. It's turned college football into professional football. Now, maybe you can still get the players, but you certainly don't have the same control over the players that you have or even really get. That you once had. And it really is becoming a much more of a professional model. And if that's the case, maybe it's a better spot for Jim Harbaugh to go back to the NFL.
I saw something yesterday that was posted up. Somebody posted a video, and actually you were in it. It was the 1990, I want to say the 96 or 97 quarterback challenge.
Oh.
And it was the distance competition. And I didn't see how it ended up, but they were like, Dan Marino's in it, Steve Young, Drew Bledsoe, Scott Mitchell, Neil O'Donnell, Kerry Collins, Jeff Hostetler, the Haas with that mustache, man. Rick Meyer was in it. Hey, Jeff Blake. Okay. And they were like, bring this back. And it was the distance competition. And they were like, what? Okay, the quarterback challenge is one thing. But the distance one, I want to see where Patrick Mahomes lines up. I want to see where these cannons of arms that are, you know, supposed to be nowadays line up against everybody else. The best throw in the history of the quarterback challenge was who? Do you remember? 1988.
I'm going to say Randall Cunningham, probably, or it was either him or Jay Schrader.
Vinny Testaverde.
Oh, really?
82 yards.
Yeah.
And that was... Man, that was – I mean, that's something we got to bring back. Apparently, they've been doing it up till through 2007.
I don't like the longest throw.
It feels like
– Nobody
You would have loved it if you –
Nobody throws the ball 82 yards, ever.
Well, no, of course not.
Maybe in the Hail Mary at the end of a game.
But you know who always did well in the
– Favre could throw.
Favre was always over 70-something.
The problem is there's an accuracy thing with it.
Yeah, you got to be inside those lines.
It's
yes.
It's the longest drive deal. You know, you got to keep it in the fairway.
It was kind of a narrow field.
Keep it in the fairway. He couldn't keep it in the fairway.
So, yeah, Vinny Testaverde. And
just thinking about that right now makes my arm ache. I like it. I like the read and recognition one.
The ones with the golf carts.
Wow, that was a fun one.
That's when you shined. Yeah. That's when you were hitting the old I always love that because they're going to put the chalk on the front of the ball here, Bill, so we can see where it hits on the target on the golf cart. I was like, all these things, this is the most – people in third world countries look at this video and they go, what is going on here? These motorized carts are driving around with targets on them. These men are throwing leather footballs at them. and they've got paint on the front of them. Yeah. Brett Favre is over 75 yards a couple of times. Jeff George, he always had a big cannon of an arm, 74 yards. Drew Bledsoe, 74 yards. So those are the and Cordell Stewart, 76 yards. So it's 82 yards from Randall Cunningham, 76. Vinny Testaverde, 82.
Randall might have had the strongest arm, though.
And then he had a handful of guys who were in the mid-70s. Yeah, Cordell Stewart, Drew Bledsoe. Steve McNair was even 72 yards, so there you go. All right, I'm taking the break here. We'll come back. We've got our two-minute drill around the corner here, Scott, so let's jump in here. We'll come back. We'll throw a bunch of stories at you, the stuff we could have gotten to, and we just didn't this hour. So here you go. More to go. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Okay, welcome back. It's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery, thanks for being with us here in the program. Oh, it's getting dark over Salt Lake City. You know what that means. It's about that time we start to play some of that fancy music here in the background. We're going to have our two-minute drill.
Boy.
Is your retirement plan bulletproof? Investments, income, taxes, health care, estate planning, all crucial. Avoid expensive mistakes with a complimentary retirement ascent plan from Teton Wealth Group. Go to retireteton.com/radio. That's retireteton.com/radio. Scott, this music means something. What does the two-minute drill mean?
I'll tell you what it means. Well, late in a football game, you got to go to the field, kick field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have the time, so you got to hurry. You can't get too much in a hurry and put the ball down. You got to let the official set it.
Whoa.
Dak Prescott.
There you go.
Our show's the same way. Still got a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy, because everybody gets a trophy today. Because we all participate.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a couple of COVID shots, a booster. We've got to wear a mask today. And we go home with a bunch of donuts and dessert. I don't know why I said donuts, but anyways.
Well, because it used to.
A plethora of
it all desserts. Started well, from the donut because of the free right, COVID Krispy shot cream. Donuts. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
And now it's just turned into, well, wherever you can find some dessert.
Yeah, any dessert. Any
go
dessert
drown your
do.
Sorrows in some dessert.
Yeah.
Hey, Jazz fans, like that game last night? Mm-hmm. Go ahead and drown your sorrows in some dessert.
It's like they sold out of Jell-O at the grocery store and donuts. And ice cream. Utah went up like big time.
We are an ice cream yes. state. What do you think? Who do you think does the best shake here in the state of Utah?
I wouldn't have the foggiest idea.
You don't even want to think about it because you don't want to like drive home. And you'll drive by 19 shake places in Loyola. JCW's, man.
Ooh-wee. Oh, you know what? Oh, yeah, that is pretty good.
And even just the classic chocolate from In-N-Out, I'm okay with. I like it a lot. Scott, first up on the old two-minute drill here. Remember I was talking about the death of the robot umpire?
Yes.
In single-A Atlantic baseball? Robot umpires coming to triple-A baseball in 2022, Scott.
Wow. So that means...
upgraded. No, they got called up, buddy. I thought they were being retired. I thought they were being dismantled. Can we make them look like robot people, though? That's the only thing I'm asking. I don't want this just being a camera somewhere, on the premises. I want a real robot with the red eyes calling balls and strikes.
Do you want a Siri voice? What kind of voice?
No,
do you
I want it
want
to look like Rosie from Rosie. from the Jetsons, and I want her making that call. I want, and that's the best part, is you get the robot.
So what, does she wear an apron too?
Well, I mean, umpires kind of already wear that. They've got like that utility belt, keep all the balls in the bags.
Yeah.
Don't you love when you watch Major League Baseball and they go, hold on, let me see that ball. It got like 6 inches from the ground. Let me take a look at it. No, you need a new one. And then if you go to any other like level of baseball, they're all, go get that ball from the parking lot, dude.
See, I have massive anxiety at Major League Baseball games that they're going to run out of baseballs. It's like they just get rid of them like they're candy.
No, they
candy.
Do.
Get this out. And this little ball boy is just constantly feeding.
Poor guy. Yeah, just handing them rockets.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what they do.
They just
It hits the ground. It's gone. It's out.
It's gone. Yeah. And sometimes they go, did it hit the ground? And the when it hits the ground and then the catcher just holds it up to the umpire, he just takes it and gives him a new one.
I think that this substance, foreign substance thing on the baseballs, I think the official, yeah, okay, I see what's going on. This is gone.
Sure.
I think that's what happens.
They get rid of all of them because they don't want to have to do it on every one of them. Yeah. You know how they rub them in that Mississippi mud or whatever it is? So they do that with all the baseballs still.
It's actually, I think, a Mississippi River mud.
Right.
I don't think it comes from Mississippi, per se.
Somewhere. They won't, like, say where it is.
It's a special
blend.
It's
like one guy. It's one guy who provides it, I think. But that being said, I actually got a tour of the facilities at the B Stadium one year, and they keep the ball in a humidifier. Like, similar to, they have a high humidity room where they keep these baseballs because the Angels, who are the big ball club for them, they don't want a doctored home run count coming out of high altitude Salt Lake City.
Oh.
What they do is so they'll have a higher
to get a mushy ball, one that's like at sea level.
It's like yes, yeah. So it has the same effect.
Got some water in it
because they don't want some guy coming up and going, man, he hit 48 home runs. Where at Salt Lake City? If they have like the ball that has the higher humidity. So I looked in that locker they showed us. The general manager of the Bees showed us one time. And it was it's chock full of baseballs. You don't have to worry about running out. Okay, that's just in AAA too. AAA baseball that includes automated ball strike techs. They're asking for it. So Major League Baseball posted a job listing for automated ball strike techs in Albuquerque, Charlotte, El Paso, Las Vegas, Oklahoma City, Reno, Round Rock, Sacramento, Salt Lake, and Tacoma. So the robot baseball umpire is coming to Salt Lake City, baby.
So they need a tech who runs the robot?
You can't apply for it, buddy. Okay.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't necessarily want to. Maybe my kids want to.
Does he run the robot?
You'd have to.
Pause, you guys. Hold on. Pause. I got to hit reset. I got
to
hit
restart. What happens when the robot has to go to the bathroom? What do they do then?
Oil change. Boom. They got it. Next up, Scott of the 2-minute drill.
Baseball game's been canceled. The robot is down for maintenance. No game tonight.
Did you see Russell Westbrook got benched last night in that loss to the Pacers?
I'm so sorry.
Makes
to hear
me
that.
Happy.
Yeah, so sorry.
Right?
Yes.
Now here's the weird relationship we have with players, coaches, and here's what the pros are versus the versus college ball. Frank Vogel was asked after the game why he benched Russell Westbrook. I mean, obviously, it's because he's playing terribly. Right. But Frank Vogel said, quote, I had permission to bench Russell Westbrook. See what we're dealing with? See what these
permission?
Guys are dealing with now?
What did LeBron say?
Who? That's what I'm saying. Like, did the Buss family call down? Did LeBron wink at him? I'm trying to think of all the bosses of that team. Frank Vogel's, like, fifth on the list.
Wow.
Did Frank Vogel's wife pass off on it? I'm just trying to think of all the places that he's being told what to do. Poor Frank Vogel. This is what Tyronn Lue had to deal with. This is what anybody who has coached a team that is made up of quote-unquote superstars had to deal with. Asking permission to bench Russell Westbrook after he goes 1-for-11 from the two-point range.
Why even have a coach? I mean, why have a coach? Why?
LeBron tell you that he could be a player coach.
Just why have a coach? Just to have the players just run the whole thing.
But you know how it is. You've taught me this. It's to have another level of somebody who goes, that's why we didn't win. You can, if you're LeBron, you go, I want Frank Vogel. Because if we're winning, I take all the glory. If we're losing, I point at Frank Vogel and go, get him out of here. I asked permission to bench Russell Westbrook. I had permission. Did Jeannie Buss call you? Jeez. Giants quarterback Daniel Jones gifts Super Bowl tickets to his high school quarterback through 8 touchdowns the day after his mother's death. We talked about that kid. Remember this?
Yeah.
This was that kid who he played the day after his mother passed away after a long, long bout with cancer. You remember this whole thing? We read about Alex Brown, who's from that area, New Jersey. He goes out the day after from Morris Catholic School. Goes after the day after his mom's death, throws for 6 touchdowns, and runs for 2 more. Remember when we talked about him? He was our MVP one day. And Daniel Jones doing the right thing, gift Super Bowl tickets to Alex Brown.
See, these athletes are human after all. They have a heart. That's nice to see. I think a lot of athletes today are actually in tune.
Do you think
that.
All the players get tickets still like they used to?
Well, of course
when
they
you
do.
Were playing?
Yeah.
Every player in the NFL gets, what, a pair of tickets, or what do you get?
Pair of tickets.
Every player in the NFL.
There's only 1,600 players in the NFL.
That's a lot, though.
That's 3,200 tickets.
What's the most you got
out of it? And there's a stadium with 60, 70,000 people.
What's the most you got out of those tickets?
I don't know. Thousands of dollars. A piece.
They're probably pretty good tickets, too. Probably pretty good seats.
Probably not in the end zone.
All right, there you go. Scott, did you have fun tonight?
Yeah, we still got a whole lot more to go. Let's do it. Let's keep going another hour.
More to go. Stay right here with us. It's Unrivaled 97.5 1280.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keering.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. Final segment. It's Unrivaled 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Scott, before we get out here, I wanted to bring up this article that I read. We were talking about earlier during the NFL roundup, we talked about Tom Brady and you know, just how awesome he is in these divisional playoffs. You think his record in the postseason overall is pretty good? The divisional round, because that's usually when he kind of gets started. You almost never see the guy lose in the divisional round. I think that the number that he has 28 touchdowns in 36 touchdowns in the divisional rounds of the playoffs. 30.
Just the divisional rounds.
Right, and like three interceptions, right? That's a full season, right, of almost perfect football from somebody in the divisional rounds he's played. Now, I read this article that talked about the possibility of him surprising everybody and retiring after this season. Do you think Tom Brady is the I did it my way, wins the Super Bowl? Does he have to win the Super Bowl to retire? Or does winning a Super Bowl actually make it to where he goes, yeah, I actually could come back pretty easily and do this again?
I think Tom Brady just looks for ways to get motivated. Like, and if he can always find a way to motivate himself to come back, then he'll do it. So I don't necessarily think that's tied to winning a Super Bowl, because I could see him go, well, I lost a Super Bowl and I don't really have the motivation to come back and try to win another one. Or he could actually win the Super Bowl and go, yeah, let me see if I can come back and win three in a row. Right? So no matter what the circumstance, I don't think it dictates what Tom Brady does. I think what dictates what Tom Brady does is, can I find my motivation? Because he's a guy that really drives himself and succeeds off of finding some way to, you know, to get himself in that frame of mind. And if he can do that, I maybe the frame of mind for Tom Brady is, say, I want to play till I'm 50. You know, so or you know, I don't know what it is, but only he knows that, and only he knows how it pushes him. And as long as he gets himself to push himself, he'll do whatever he wants. I don't think it's tied to anything.
I just think that, you know, we think about guys walking away and going, I did it my way, you know? And we go,
well, everyone
Tom
thinks,
Brady.
You know, John Elway and the whole thing, and that's how you should.
It's a perfect,
you know,
way to go out.
Is to go out. And I don't know that Tom Brady.
There's some
Tom
guys
Brady,
who could never
there's
turn
like
it off.
Nothing he has to do will improve, discredit, or minimize his legacy. It's so entrenched and so solid, I don't think it matters at this point. So he just like he's on borrowed money, and he's been there for a long time. And it, you know, a guy like John Elway kind of needed redemption. You know, he'd lost those four Super Bowls, couldn't win the big game, and winning it the last few years of his career. Yeah, yeah. That was redemption. He almost needed that.
Final break. We're done. Let's get to it. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. We'll be back again tomorrow for another edition, a Friday edition of Unrivaled. So we'll talk to you then, everybody. 97.5 1280 The Zone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads.
Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.